Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Outshine is the number one frozen fruit bar brand in America. And once you try them, it's easy to see why. Their fruit bars and mini fruit pops are made with real fruit or fruit juice using simple ingredients you can pronounce. That means no high fructose corn syrup and no artificial colors or flavors. Outshine bars are gluten-free and even a good source of vitamin C. And the flavor lineup? It's stacked. We're talking strawberry, mango, coconut, watermelon, pineapple, cherry, you name it, there's something for whatever you're craving. You've got classic fruit bars, mini fruit pops, and fruit blends that swirl multiple flavors together. Think pina colada, cherry limeade, and more. Find your new favorite refreshing snack, Outshine, at retailers nationwide.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice
Age! You want a cup of joe with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, Season 2, Episode 32... I am Ken Jack. You got Chris Castellani here. No Jeff today, but in a first-time third mic appearance, we have the Goochman, the producer of Lights, Camera, Barstool, The Dozen, and much, much more. So how's it feel finally being behind the mic?
Oh, great. I'm sure everyone was dying to hear me instead of Jeff. So happy to be here. I'm going to do a good job filling in. Maybe just Wally Pip Jeff out of here, but... Yeah, hopefully I don't fuck this up too bad.
Well, today we are reviewing the grand old Fantastic Beasts 3, a movie I know we are all super excited to watch. Before we do that, we're going to do some news. And before that, we're going to hear from our first sponsor, 10,000. 10,000 makes the highest quality, best fitting, and most comfortable training shorts I have ever worn. Their interval short is the most popular and versatile style that they have. It's perfect for gym days, spinning, short runs, high interval training, and backyard workouts. With tons of features like silver ion for odor protection, which I always need when I'm working out because I'm a stinky ass motherfucker. No bounce pockets, breathable and lightweight shell fabric. No bounce phone pocket, which is super great, especially when you're out running out in the wild and you can't just put your phone on a treadmill. It has the optimal liner as well, which is super nice because that's another thing where if you're like me and you like running and you don't like your flopping around and whatnot, it helps with that. It also helps with chafing too if you're a big boy like me. Their versatile shirt is the perfect workout shirt as well. It's lightweight, breathable, and durable. I've been wearing this since they had sent it to me, the 7-inch interval short and their versatile shirt. Super, super awesome stuff. In addition to the interval short, they make gear specific to other types of training, from running to Olympic lifting to boxing, so you can find a short for all the ways you train. They have free shipping and free returns and a lifetime guarantee. Like I said before, I wear their stuff all the time. It's fantastic. 10,000 is offering our listeners 15% off your purchase. Go to 10,000.com, send cc/lights to receive 15% off your purchase. That is 10,000.cc/lights. Check them out. Thank you to 10,000. We got a couple news items on today. The first is literally this morning at 10 a.m., the trailer for Thor, Love, and Thunder dropped. It follows, and this is, I think, the first synopsis we actually got for it, too. It follows Thor on a quest for inner peace, but his retirement is interrupted by Gore the God Butcher, played by Christian Bale, who is seeking the extinction of the gods. Thor enlists the helps of King Valkyrie, Korg, Jane Foster, who now is Mjolnir as the mighty Thor. Had Sweet Child of Mine playing over it. I thought it was awesome. Can't wait to see Christian Bale. This comes out in, I think, July 8th, which is only 80 days away, which is crazy. But I thought the trailer was awesome. Really love that 80s vibe that Taika Waititi kept, because he had the synthy shit in Ragnarok, and then he moved it on to 80s glam rock now in this trailer, and I love that about this. But Chris, what did you think?
It's a really cool teaser. It looks great. I mean, what Taika's done with Thor, I think, is so unique in the sense that it's one of the great turnarounds in the MCU, and the fact that Thor 2 is such a dimly lit, just bland-looking movie, and Ragnarok is just, infused with this massive splash of color. I love the way this trailer is put together. It's a really well-put-together teaser. The one issue I have, and it's an issue I had when they announced what the premise of this was going to be. I'm not saying it's going to be bad, and I do think this movie's going to be really good. I'm not sure how much I'm going to buy Natalie Portman as Lady Thor. That's the one thing where I'm like, Everything else about this looks hilarious. That just there's like more awesome shots in this 90-second teaser than there are in like a lot of two-hour movies. But that is the one element where I'm like, man, first of all, she hasn't been in one of these movies since Thor 2. It's been a long time. It might seem a little bit kind of out of left field. I don't know if I'll buy her there. But other than that, it looks really good. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm actually more excited for this than I am for Doctor Strange, to be honest with you, just because I love Taika Waititi's movies.
Yeah, I'm with you, Chris. I'm definitely more excited for this than almost any other Marvel project coming up. I'll be honest. I've been waiting on this trailer as the person who runs social for months, checking Twitter 9 a.m., 12 p.m. religiously. And, of course, it hits at 10 a.m. of all times, and I miss it because I'm in the shower.
Right.
That's a rule sometimes.
I don't think they even needed to release this. I'm happy they did. I was kind of hoping Marvel was just going to be like, fuck it. Show up to the theaters July 8th. It's Thor. You know what it is. This is the fourth movie. Everyone knows Chris Hemsworth. We all know the premise. They announced it 3 years ago. Yeah, I mean, I'm sold. There's not much else they need to do. I really don't need to see anything else. I saw people complaining that they showed Natalie Portman with Mjolnir.
They did that 3 years ago.
I know, and that's the thing. I'm like, this isn't new. Right. Like, this has been out there. This has been, like, the premise. That's why it's called Love and Thunder. Like, that's been the premise since the get-go. So, yeah, I'm ready for it. I really don't need to see anything else. I'm kind of happy they didn't put Christian Bale in the trailer.
Yeah.
Kind of also didn't really show Russell Crowe at all. They just showed his back. Could have been anybody's back. Yeah, I know. Could have been Dwayne Johnson. Who knows? Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I think we theorized a little bit, right, that it was going to be at the end of Multiverse of Madness, this first trailer. I'm happy it wasn't. Like, I'd much rather this drop than it being connected to Multiverse of Madness, because I don't think that those movies have, like, a ton of connective tissue within this universe, so to speak, and I'm happy that they're letting it be its own thing.
I would, and how have they started filming Guardians 3 yet?
I don't think they started filming. I know that Gunn said he finished the script, I think.
Okay.
So I don't think,
because I was wondering if there would be, I feel like there's going to be some sort of connection to Guardians 3 at the end of this. Also, though, just watching the little, you know, snippets that they released, is this Hemsworth's last, like, go as Thor? Or is he signed on for more things?
I don't know what his contract is.
It kind of leans, based on what I saw in this teaser, that there's kind of a conclusion to his arc here.
Yeah.
I feel like he might just stay around forever. But
he kind of feels like a fifth-year senior in college right now, where the rest of the Avengers have just graduated and gone. Like, RDJ's gone and Chris Evans is gone. He's just kind of hanging out with the young guys right now, just still throwing back beers. That's just kind of the vibes I get off of him, and I can't imagine he stays around much longer.
With the Asgardians, too. And that's the one thing I'm looking forward to, I think, more than anything else. Even though the trailer kind of implies that won't be, like, the theme of the entire movie. It looks like they're going to kind of part ways at some point during the movie. But I'm very pumped to see their interaction again, because I think that the interactions between Star-Lord and Thor in the last Endgame, were really, really funny. And I think that both Chrises, have great comedic timing, and they're hilarious. Obviously, Dave Bautista, amazing. Everyone in the Guardians really is really, honestly, stellar. So I'm excited to see that. Yeah. I think that, what do you call it? The holiday special is due for this holiday season, I believe. The Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. So they have that filmed at least. I don't know what the third one would be. But is coming out July 8th. Very excited to watch that. Still very surprised about the 80-day turnaround time for a marketing campaign. Yeah. But it's one of those things where, like, Marvel, they don't need to, really, I guess. So, like, it's not exactly super crazy. I was reading something. I think that our good friend Liam Crowley posted this. The guy who works over at, I believe, MCU Direct. He posted that this is the shortest turnaround or marketing campaign for any Marvel movie ever. And the next one, I think, was Incredible Hulk, the 2008 one. So, like, that's
who could forget that marketing campaign?
Exactly. That stellar marketing campaign for Edward Norton as the Hulk.
Didn't they spoil that movie in the marketing, too? entirely?
I think they did. They show Abomination.
They show Tony Stark's cameo.
That's
one of the teasers, yeah. That's the only MCU movie that had a post-credit sequence they didn't even get the post-credit sequence right. It wasn't post-credits. They just put it at the end of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. It's just at the actual end. Next up, we got Christopher Lloyd is going to star in a Spirit Halloween movie. It's supposed to follow a group of middle school friends that get locked inside a haunted store Spirit Halloween store on Halloween night. This is something where, like, I read it and it's kind of like mixed feelings, because like we always complain and everyone always complains like there's not enough original movies, like everything's part of a franchise, blah 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 blah. And like I agree to that to an extent, and at the same time I'm not like chomping at the bit to see a movie about like a memed out Halloween story, you know what I mean? It's like I feel like we could do something more original. But at the same time, like the president of the studio that's making it, Nora Med, said that one of the reasons I immediately connected with the script is that it very much is inspired by some of my favorite kid movies growing up, from The Goonies, Gremlins, Monster Squad, and other great Amblin movies. Not everyone can do Amblin correctly. I think even we saw with we did obviously Adam Project recently, like Amblin Light can be like it feels like an imitation at times, and but at the same time I do think that Christopher Lloyd is one of those guys that like everyone can connect with in a familial sense, like as Doc Brown is going to connect with everyone who's older, and I don't know, I'm kind of excited for it.
I'm intrigued by it. I like these premises, especially with I feel like it's been a while since we've had like a Halloween themed like really unique premise. Like you find stuff, you know, on the independent circuit here and there. And this is going to sound so cornball, but you know, it was a recent movie that I thought actually that came out around that time that I hope this reminds me of. I liked the Goosebumps movie they did. I'm not saying it was scary or anything, but I thought the one with Jack, I thought that was cute. And I think you have Christopher Lloyd. Obviously, people go to Back to the Future, but like there is something so endearing. He is, him and Dan Aykroyd are the masters of exposition in movies, of explaining premises and like playing into, you know, they're great character actors. I hope that we get something really unique with this, because especially with Spirit Halloween or any Halloween store that people have such a, you know, nostalgic attachment to, I think you could really have a lot of fun with that premise. If it's well directed, I think this could be something that could even be like a Halloween classic. And I hope that's the case, because like you said, it's, even though it's based on, you know, it takes place in a store, like I think there's a lot of interesting things that you could do with a premise like this, especially something that's based around Halloween. So I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's Christopher Lloyd, so I'm already sold on it. Yeah. And I love Halloween movies, especially when they're fun instead of just absolutely terrifying, because I'm a little bitch boy. And yeah. I will piss my pants in the theater for most of those, just absolutely straight up one we're about to talk about, the Cronenberg movie.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, no, it should be original. I don't know how well it's going to age. It feels like Spirit Halloween's on life support right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, Amazon and every other online retailer has kind of put those kind of stores to shame. And they really just exist for that 4 hours before you're going to go to a Halloween party. And you're like, I don't have anything in my house that I can even put together. So I'm just going to go spend $40 on something pre-made. But it should be fun. I mean, be a fun little movie.
Yeah. I think the one thing that will scare me the most is I hate animatronic animals and animatronic anything. And like for example, the movie Willy's Wonderland, the one with Nick Cage, that movie like freaked me the fuck out. And like,
really?
Yeah, dude, I hate animatronic animals. Like that's that whole sort of like movement, that like robotic-ish movement in those giant weird proportions. Like really, it's always bugged me out a ton. And I think that having that element in this store with like all like whatever the creatures they're gonna have, I don't know what licensing they'll have to use different horror creatures or whatever, but like I'm very pumped to see how they do that element of it. And I agree with you, Chris, like it could be like something that could end up being like a Halloween kids classic, right? Because it's all about like kids being stuck in the store. But also I agree with you, Robbie, and that, like I may not age well because Spirit Halloween might be dead within like the next like 5 years thanks to online retailing. But I don't know. I mean, like,
but you know, even if it does die though, it could end up being one of those things where it goes the way of Blockbuster, where it comes full circle and immediately people have that nostalgic attachment to it again. Like Randall Park is gonna be in a movie now about like the last Blockbuster. I think there could be something similar that happens with Spirit Halloween, where people just have that nostalgic attachment to it.
True. Yeah, maybe we'll get one about like the last KB Toys eventually. Like,
yeah, exactly.
We'll get there eventually. Next up, we have the first trailer for a movie I had no idea was in existence. Crimes of the Future. It's a new David Cronenberg movie. It looks fucking bizarre. It looks so cool. The synopsis, like, I could barely understand what was happening in the trailer for the movie. The synopsis has only made it more confusing. As the human species adapts to a synthetic environment, the body undergoes new transformations and mutations. With his partner Caprice, played by Lea Seydoux, Saul Tenser, played by Viggo Mortensen, a celebrity performance artist, publicly showcases the metamorphosis of his organs in an avant-garde performance. Tim Lin, played by Kristen Stewart, is an investigator for the National Organ Registry, love that place, obsessively tracks their movements, and when his mysterious group is revealed, their mission to use Saul's notoriety to shed light on the next phase of human evolution. Again, as confusing as that goddamn trailer was, that synopsis only makes it worse. Like, I still don't understand what the fuck is happening in this. But David Cronenberg directing, obviously Viggo Mortensen, that's something that's always been, I think, a success. He obviously directed him in History of Violence and Eastern Promises. Cronenberg's also just like a horror legend, Scanners, Videodrome, The Fly. I just think that this movie looks freaky in the absolute best way. And the fact that, like, we got it so soon, like, it's coming out in June. Like, I'm so pumped to watch this because, like, Viggo's a guy where he's like appointment watching for me. Like, I'll watch, it could be anything from, you know, the just okay Green Book, or it could be like, well, he did that movie in Greece with Oscar Isaac that was really freaky, like The Ides of June or January or something. I don't know. Like, I'll watch him in literally anything because I think he's such a great actor. And obviously both Kristen Stewart and Lea Seydoux are both incredible as well. So I'm very excited for this.
I have very little to say except this David Cronenberg movie very much looks like a David Cronenberg movie.
Yes.
I mean, it's about as David Cronenberg-y as it gets. I guess, well, he's got two lanes, though. He has the more, like, subdued, like, History of Violence, Eastern Promises, Cosmopolis, where he's, you know, all his movies have, tell good stories, but then there's the full-on body horror, and I feel like this goes more into, you know, the latter direction. I'm really intrigued by it. I mean, he's got a pretty good track record in terms of, like, every, even his not so good movies have a lot of merit to them. Like, I don't think he's made a lot of duds. I think that he's the definition of a true visionary. So I don't know how I'm gonna feel about this, but it's definitely an intriguing trailer. And as you brought up earlier, like, original ideas, bring them. I think that's really cool. Yeah,
I'm definitely intrigued by it. I don't know how excited I am to see it. Going back to me being a little bitch boy, I'll see it. I'm sure it's gonna be beautiful. I'm sure it's gonna look great. Probably be great. I don't know if I'm going to watch it twice. It just looks terrifying to me.
Yeah, it's I think Chris put it best, just like most very, very David Cronenberg-y. Like, and just like you said, like, these weird like levels of flesh. I know it's weird. I was looking at his wiki the other day. Let's see. I want to see it again because he had like these nicknames, which I never knew he had, which are very funny.
Like, it's a basketball reference.
Yeah, like basketball reference.
When,
like,
the Pharaoh.
Yeah, the Pharaoh. Like, yeah, everyone calls LeBron James or whatever the Pharaoh. No one does that.
The crony.
So the Baron of Blood. I love that for Cronenberg. It makes sense.
Pretty good.
You know, which is funny too, because I remember I was watching like a TV or a movie trivia thing. The scene in Scanners where that guy's head blows up. Apparently, it was just legitimately, they took a shotgun, put it behind this prop head, and literally shot it open. Because, like, they're like, we can't get the effect to look right. They did it, like, a million times. They couldn't get it to work. And they're just like, let's just use a shotgun and literally blow up this little, you know, sheep brain-filled sack or whatever. It looked great. That's one of the most iconic scenes in horror ever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he's called the Baron of Blood and also the King of Venereal Horror. Love that, too. Love that. Love
it's
both those.
It's a bit lengthy, but, yeah, it's pretty
good. I like Baron of Blood's a little tighter. Yeah. For sure. Before we get into our next bit of news, let's hear really quick from BetterHelp. People don't always realize that physical symptoms like headaches, teeth grinding, and even digestive issues can be indicators of stress. And let's not forget about doom scrolling, sleeping too little, sleeping too much, and undereating and overeating. Stress shows up in all kinds of ways. And in a world where you're getting told nonstop to do more, sleep less, and grind all the time, here's a reminder to take care of yourself, do less, and maybe try some therapy. And, you know, I've used BetterHelp forever, especially during COVID. It really helps out because you can do a lot of the stuff remote, and like it's in ways that I never thought was possible because I would always go physically into an actual therapist's office. But, you know, BetterHelp is customized online therapy. They offer video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to go and see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy. And go give it a try, and you can see if online therapy can help lower your stress levels. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Lights, Camera, Barstool listeners get 10% off the first month at betterhelp.com/lights. That's BETTERHELP.com/lights. Thanks to BetterHelp. Next up, we have there was a little news that came out from Chris McKenna, the writer of Spider-Man No Way Home. He said there was a scrapped plot in No Way Home where Venom was at the Statue of Liberty fight. I don't know how you guys feel about this. I think it's for the best that Venom was not involved.
I think you know how I feel. taking away the fact that I just think Eddie Brock / Venom is the most annoying character since Jar Jar Binks. It would have been too much. Just beyond just personal feelings. I think that the core of that, like the heart of that final sequence, wasn't so much the villains. It was those three Spider-Men together. And I think if you would have pulled a, hey, it's this guy. Hey, it's this guy. Oh, now this guy's here with that last act. Because there were rumors about Mysterio as well coming back. It would have just felt like they were throwing an infinite amount of things to the wall and trying to figure out what stuck. Where I think that I had a few issues with No Way Home, but the things it absolutely needed to get right, which is all the Spider-Man stuff and them interacting, was perfect. It would have been one giant distraction. And I also think, like, we talked about it a little bit. Like, I think Kevin Feige is so against having Venom even be remotely
tangentially related to MCU at all.
Where it's like, I feel like he negotiated so much just to get to a point where it's like, look, we'll put him in the mid-credit sequence, all right? But that nothing else. So I feel like that was this was probably in the very, very early stages of development. Regardless of my personal feelings towards those movies, I really do think it was substantially, like, way for the better that they didn't include him in that final battle.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but can you imagine if all those Spider-Men were just swinging around the Statue of Liberty with Venom and you just hear Eminem blaring in the background? Imagine that moment.
If you would have done that, it would have been cool.
All respect to Michael Giacchino, but Eminem is the rap god.
That would have been absolutely hilarious if there's blasting, like, what was his big line? He's like,
knock, knock, let the devil in.
No, the Venom rap. I actually like that better instead of
Venom. I think that is just the
chainsaw. He says something about a chainsaw, which is very funny. I don't remember it exactly, but if Eminem started blasting in the middle of an MCU movie, I would have absolutely adored it. Like, that scene would have been made infinitely better, as I'm sure Detroit man Chris.
Yeah, no, that was absolutely the correct decision, just to not only not use him in the movie, but basically write him out of the universe.
Yes,
in that mid-credit scene. I mean, I like Tom Hardy. He is not the right person for that role in my mind.
Same.
At all. I'm with you. In my mind, Eddie Brock is just close to the same age as Peter Parker, if not the same age. And it just looks it would look so weird having Tom Holland interact with Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they just kind of nixed that in the butt right off the get-go.
Yeah. Yeah, keeping him in a very limited mid-credit scene is definitely the right move. And what is it? I remember your feelings, Chris, on the second Venom movie. You think it was like the worst comic book movie of all time?
I don't know if it's the worst of all time. I think it's... I don't know, man. It's
people
it's one
like
of the worst
that movie.
That's Venom
the
fans
craziest
are weird,
part.
Dude.
One of my friends texted me like the night it came out. He's like, "Did you see the new Venom? It's great." I'm like, I got out of this movie like 10 minutes before he texted me, and I was like, "Did we see the same movie? I don't even know what I just watched."
I think it's one of those weird things, where because I don't think any of us really liked the first one, but it was so vanilla as a film. Where I'm like, okay, you can actually if you just take out all the bad stuff in this, you could actually improve on this and make a good series. And they doubled, tripled, and quadrupled down on all the things that were bad about the first movie and took out all the things that were good.
Give us the rave scene, though, which I thought wasn't real when I first saw
the Venom rave.
Saw the image going around online. It just ended up being real, just him wearing those glow sticks. It's one of the greatest shots from any comic book movie ever.
That was one of the weirdest movie experiences, because when me, Jeff, and Robbie went, and when we went there, Andy Serkis was there at our screening. This guy, while we were waiting in line to get in the IMAX theater, because we were surrounded. It's basically like us. Like, we're just like three guys who are just there because we have to watch the movie. And then, like, the other – everyone else there was, like, a Venom super fan that, like, won some sort of fan lottery to get there. And so, like, we're surrounded by guys in, like, super smelly snapbacks decked out in, like, Venom gear, like, top to bottom. And this guy comes up to us, like, "Hey, did you hear Andrew's here?" I'm like, "Who the fuck are you talking about?" And he was talking about Andy Serkis. Like, who refers to Andy Serkis as Andrew? But that ended up, like, we went into the theater, and then Andy Serkis, like, comes out and, like, presents the movie and everything. And it was cool. And, like, we're sitting right in front row. Like, that should be something where it gives you, like, a serious honeymoon phase for a movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, a huge director coming out and, like, introducing it. It didn't really help at all. Like, me and Jeff, I remember just looking at each other the entire time during the movie, like, "Oh, no, this is really bad." And it was, I think the best thing we said about it was that it was thankfully very short. Like, if that was any longer, that would have been.
It didn't feel like it, but you are correct.
Yeah.
Is it just, I think I'd probably go against the grain here as a big Spider-Man fan. I think Venom, just as a character and as a villain, has never been as cool as people think he is. Mm. Like, I would not put him in, like, the god tier of Spider-Man villains. He looks cool.
Yeah, when you're 7 years old and you're watching him on the Spider-Man animated series, it looked like the coolest thing ever.
Yes.
For sure, yeah. But outside, right, he's a cool-looking character, but I never, like, the whole idea of we need to make a Venom movie because he's just that interesting. Yeah, he's kinda, I guess. I don't know. I've never... I never really got the hype, and how I feel about those movies is kind of
they really don't
of
dip
that.
To them too much in the comics either. It's always more Goblin. It's more Electro stuff.
Yeah,
it's never as much Venom as what people would think.
And he was introduced late. Like, he, in the grand scheme of things, he's still a pretty new Spider-Man villain. Like, I think he was early 90s, whereas Goblin and Doc Ock and Mysterio, yeah, they were Doc all Ock, early, yeah, like, Stan Lee comic characters.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just he's never had that same feel. And I feel like that movie, I know we're not really talking about we're just kind of talking about how for this Venom's a bit now we're just roasting Venom too.
But it's so much fun though.
The fact that movie doubled down, and like you were saying, Chris, mostly on the fact that, like, hey, we're just going to do the same villain thing. Like, we're going to have him also fight against another symbiote, and like that's it. The same plot, except shorter, with one of the, I think, the worst performances of Woody Harrelson's entire career. And I don't know if it's necessarily his fault versus how it was directed for him to present the character, but horrid movie.
Barcode ass haircut.
Yeah, that fucking haircut, man. Cletus Cassidy, such a cool name too. That would be a great football player name. If we're gonna do that, I remember we did a second version of this with you, Chris, like the football players draft, right? Yeah, that would be a great football player name. Next up, we had the first trailer for Stranger Things Season 4. It's been 6 months since the Battle of Starcourt, which brought terror and destruction to Hawkins. Struggling in the aftermath, our group of friends are separated for the first time, navigating the complexities of high school that hasn't made anything easier. It's the second to the last season. I believe you have the fifth season is supposed to be the last season of Stranger Things. I did not love any season following the first season at all, really. There's something about this series, like, I can't help but think if this series ended after that first season, it would go down as like one of the best series maybe like I've ever introduced by a streaming platform before. Like, it was so good, so like I would say like perfectly encapsulating of like that 80s sort of adventure drug genre, also of that era, and like I really really liked that. And then the further they got in, like, season two was such a wash to me, season three a little bit better, but like it's just I really, really wish that this show ended after that first season, because I just can't help but think like they really have diluted the product down quite a bit from that first one. So I'm not super pumped for this one, especially knowing that we have another season on the horizon, because like at this point the kids are like fucking 22 years old, so like it's weird seeing them at this age now playing like in freshman in high school. It's bizarre. That's coming out on May 27th. But Chris, what do you think?
I've had a weird journey with Stranger Things, because it seems like Stranger Things, I think 16 was when it first aired, 2016. And I didn't watch the first season until recently. And I did it in reverse order, because after Stranger Things first came out, then we got a bunch of 80s nostalgia movies. Like, I mean, obviously we just saw like Adam Project and the first It movie. Yeah, like we've had a lot of those. So by the time I watched season one of Stranger Things, I'm like, I'm just kind of done. That's not to mention also every Adam Sandler movie since like 2000 just is in love with the 80s. Yeah. So I was like, all right, I've had a little bit enough with the 80s nostalgia. But it was a really well-done season and a really well-done series, and I understand why it became as popular as it did. And I love David Harbour. So I'm not as invested in this as other people are, but I hope it's really good. I hope people enjoy it, because I know it was such a big deal when that first season came out, just how much people loved it. So I hope it rights the ship. And are 4 and 5 like back-to-back seasons?
I think they're like released in like almost like a part one, part two thing, right?
Yeah, so they're splitting 4 into 2 parts, Attack on Titan, basically. So maybe we'll get part 3 in like 2025. They follow that trend. But every episode's going to be over an hour long, which is interesting.
Wow.
I can't remember the last show to really run episodes that long.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long time to sit down and just watch an episode.
Did Mando do it?
Some episodes, like they'd have like one or two episodes a season that were like that breached that like 45-minute mark, maybe. And then like I think they had one episode that was over an hour. But yeah, I don't think Stranger Things has done much to earn an hour-long runtime on episodes, especially in a 9-episode season, I think it is, right? Or something like that.
I am interested in the staying power of Stranger Things, because despite the, you know, lackluster last two seasons, or, you know, forgettable. I honestly can't remember much. I remember there's some Russian stuff. Joe Keery's hair looks incredible. Very jealous of that.
Thick.
Maya Hawke is working at a hot dog stand or something.
That was a big meme. I remember.
Can't remember much else, but the show is arguably the biggest show in the world. I mean, it's Netflix's baby. They are the streaming giant. They're the kings of the world. And I guess they're going to keep giving these creators to as much money as they want to keep pumping these seasons out, even though I guess this is the last one. So I'd be interested to see what they do after this, because like you said, Chris, it is well made. It's not like it's poorly made stuff. It's just I'm just not interested in it. I'll do a rewatch before the fourth season comes out.
I'll do a rewatch of season one, and then
I'll watch a recap.
Yeah, a YouTube recap of season two and three. I don't know. I just feel like if the season ended a little earlier, it would just could have gone down so much more. It'd be held in much higher reverence. Yeah,
it would be. I think the cultural impact would be so much stronger.
Yes, because everyone'd be like, "Wow, why didn't they ever release a second season of Stranger Things?" Like, I feel like, and it's good for the actors, and I'm always happy for like obviously actors getting work, like production people getting work, all of that shit. But like for the sake of the actual art, I feel like if they just kept on that one, it would be better. It's like a pair of brothers, that right?
Stranger Things, right? It's two guys.
It's two dudes. I think they're brothers, right? That write them.
I don't know. I have my phone in my hand. I can look it up.
Yes. Fuck. What's their names? God damn it. The Duffer Brothers, yeah.
The Duffer Brothers, yeah.
That's... Are they twins?
The Duff. Did they write The Duff?
That would actually be really funny if they did. Terrible movie. I think they're twins. Yeah, they're twins. Oh, yeah.
They're twins?
Yeah, and I instantly don't trust any twin. I don't know what it is. Twin energy always kind of freaks me out a little bit. There's something about it. I can't explain it. Can't put like a needle on it or whatever. But
they really look alike.
Yeah, for real. That's like, have you ever heard our theory?
The same haircut and same facial hair. Wow.
Yeah, they're using the same exact buzzer, like number and everything. they're a little weird. There's something about them. Oh, do you ever hear our theory, Chris, that the Property Brothers fuck each other?
No, but I believe it.
Yeah,
I
buy see? It. It's just one of those things. It just got that weird energy. But yeah, Stranger Things season 4 comes out on the 27th. Next up, just really quick, Gilbert Gottfried passed away last week. Obviously, a huge loss. He's one of those guys where, like, and I think when I put this in, like, my blog about him, he's, like, kind of a unicorn in that he was one of the most, like, revered insult comics and crude and, like, nasty comics in the world, but he was also like a staple in kids entertainment, which is like bizarre. And one of the only other people to really do that was Bob Saget, and like Bob Saget obviously also recently passed away, but Gottfried was awesome. Like I think he's one of those guys, like, you could identify, he's probably the most recognizable voice in the entirety of Hollywood, right? Like, you could be five rooms away there. You hear him talking.
Him and Morgan Freeman.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe Morgan Freeman's the other one, but yeah,
it's one of those things, like, when you heard him, Gottfried, you could hear his voice on TV five rooms away and you know it's him. Like, it's like there's no question, and you hear Gilbert Gottfried talking or someone impersonating him or something.
Every time I see a duck, I think of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The Affleck duck, and he lost that.
Which is insane, because like you said, he was known for being an insult comic and a very crude comedian. Mm-hmm. And then he made a pretty off-color joke about tsunamis in Japan. But it's like, come on, Affleck, you knew the game.
When I was looking this up for his obituary, I didn't know this. I was just looking at how he lost his job for Affleck. Affleck does like 70% of their business in Japan.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
What the fuck? Like, I thought there was just like a straight up American company. That's bizarre to me. But yeah, a little bit of a weird one for Gilbert Gottfried there. But yeah, great comic. His Aristocrats pivot after his 9/11 joke, like weeks after 9/11 during the roast of Hugh Hefner. Yeah. Very funny. Just like a legendary comedian, gone too soon. And if you want to know more about him, I would highly recommend watching, I believe it's Gilbert, the documentary on him, which is on NBC.
You really gained a greater appreciation for him. And weirdly, despite all the foul things he would say, seemed like a guy who actually had a pretty good heart. There was a clip that was shown I'm a softy when it comes to this stuff that like made me weep of him, you know, hanging out with kids with autism and stuff like that. I thought that was really, really great. I actually have a little inside story. My brother works in Chicago. And when I think this was at the company he used to work for, used to have like motivational speakers every week. And this was like 2016, 2017. So the first few were all like, you know, members of the 2016 Cubs. And you would have Schwarber and Baez come in. Schwarber would talk about like, yeah, you know, I blew out my knee and didn't think I'd come back, but I came back for the World Series. And then for some reason, some guy booked Gilbert Gottfried for one of the appearances. And Gilbert Gottfried isn't exactly Stephen Wright, like when it comes to just quiet subtlety as a comedian. So he comes up there and starts screaming in front of a crowd of like 200 people how he like walked in on his girlfriend getting fucked in the ass. And stuff like that. And so everyone there was super uncomfortable because they were just used to people talking about like achieving their dreams. And he was doing a set in front of like this entire company. And my brother said it was the hardest he'd ever laughed at anything. But it just goes to show, like, that to me is representative of what a great comedian should be and what a lot of great comedians aren't allowed to be anymore, which is a guy who's like, regardless of the situation, regardless of how uncomfortable it makes you, he is funny regardless. Mm-hmm. And he had that way of constantly finding a way to be funny regardless of the situation.
Yeah, like unapologetically funny. It just like it's one of those guys that just like he would say literally anything. And that's another guy he in the same vein of Saget, where like I only knew him as like Iago or from like TMNT. Yes. And like then I watch him on a YouTube special being like, ah, my wife got fucked in the ass. And I'd be like, what? That's the same guy that just did that? I was watching one of the clips that went viral after he passed was the Hollywood Squares bit, the You Fool bit, which I had never seen before, which was so goddamn funny. He was just a treasure. But yeah, so anyway, we're going to move on to our little review of Fantastic Beasts. But before that, we have an ad from Manscaped. Let's talk about Manscaped. Manscaped has the full package you need for spring cleaning this year. The Performance Package 4.0. It's the only tool that you need to help keep your boys looking and smelling fresh. To start off, your spring cleaning anyway, use the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer to get the most precise shave on your hedges. I like how they say hedges. That's actually really smart instead of pubes. Although I just said pubes, so I guess I kind of ruined it. Clear your holes and smell the spring air with the Weed Whacker. This nose and ear and air and hair trimmer helps with the proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. After clearing your nose, make sure to get rid of all that foul ball smell with the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. The Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner for your balls. Keep your boys from sticking to your leg and leave them smelling like fresh flowers. Finish your grooming routine with the Plow 2.0. It's the perfect razor for the finest shave on your face. Because you're using the Lawnmower 4.0 on your balls and your face, you're doing it wrong, boys. Start of spring also marks the start of Testicular Cancer Awareness Month in April. Manscaped has partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to bring awareness to testicular cancer, men's health, and early cancer detection. Manscaped is committed to raising the awareness for the most common form of cancer in men aged 15 to 35 and for giving support for fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer as part of their We Save Balls initiative. Save 20% off and get free shipping with the code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. It's time to throw out your old hygiene habits and upgrade your life. Thank you to our friends from Manscaped. And actually, before we go into Fantastic Beasts, we had a little interview, a sit-down with Craig Robinson, who many of you will know from, unfortunately, probably The Office first, even though he's been in many other things. But The Office and then many other hilarious projects. He talked to us about his new series, Killing It, which can't wait to watch. He was very, very funny. Here's Craig Robinson.
All right, we are joined today for the first time by Craig Robinson. How's it go? We just asked how's it going before we started recording, but now for the people listening, how's it going?
It's going great, man. It's going, having a good time. You know, I live in L.A., so I love coming to New York, and it's a pleasure to be amongst you gentlemen.
You picked a good day, too, because it's actually warm today. It was, like, freezing this whole week, like 40 and freezing rain, and now it's, like, actually, like 70-something today.
Yeah, it's nice out there, man. Yeah. Nice to see the people out in New York. Mm-hmm. Spring day, right? What's the spring still?
Are we? Yeah.
Are we spring yet?
Yeah, we're spring.
Started
yeah.
Spring already.
It's a nice, beautiful spring day in New York.
Yeah.
We're not weather experts, unfortunately, but I do think it's spring. I will say that. I think that's confirmable. Yeah.
Is that a fingerprint behind you? A fingerprint painting?
No, it's like a basket behind me.
Oh.
A big weave.
Okay.
Big
weave. You see what basket. I thought, right? You see what I thought it was.
Yeah. No, yeah. That'd be an absolute fucking masterpiece. A fingerprint painting that big.
Pretty dope.
Something. You have a new show coming out.
Killing it.
Peacock. There's a couple synopses that I could read for those who don't know what it is. But I'm going to read the one off YouTube because I think it's got the best ending. And then you can expand on it for those who may not know. Killing It stars Craig Robinson. Oh, how about that? As an underdog pursuing the American dream, facing relatable yet absurd obstacles in order to make it big, and also about hunting snakes. That's what it said at the end there. Yeah. Hunting really big snakes. Added that on. Accurate, can you expand that? What can people expect from Killing It?
Yeah, I'm a bank security guard turned python hunter in pursuit of the American dream. I turn python hunter because I lose my apartment, my car burns up, and I lose my job, all in pretty much 24 hours, I think. So yeah, that happens, and then I find out about this snake hunting contest, because in Florida they actually need you to do this. They have these they're overrun with snakes.
Burmese pythons.
Exactly. Yeah. So I go. So I see that this contest, and I sign up. That's all in the pilot. I just gave you the whole pilot. You're welcome.
I'll skip to two. No, so this comes out April 14th on Peacock. Also from the same minds, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Office, Parks and Rec. Can you expect the same vibe? Where does it differ a little bit from those shows?
You know what? It's a different muscle. It's a different muscle. I mean, there's the comedy there. It's more like an Eastbound and Downish versus the you know how Brooklyn Nine-Nine is probably four jokes a minute or whatever. But this is it's a slower burn, but it's got some good stuff in there.
We're super pumped up for it. I know, and I think there's something about specifically NBC comedies that seem to like stand out versus almost any other like network's comedies. And like specifically, I would say ones from this group of minds too. Like, what do you think it is that about them and about NBC comedies that just seem to pop versus everywhere else?
You know, I wish I know what you're saying. I wish I could put my finger on it. I've been working with these guys on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know, once a year for the past 7-8 years, whatever it is. And so we got together and was like, you know, they were like, want to do something around you. They came up with these three ideas. This one was the one that like was like, okay, this is different. This is there's nothing like this out there. And they got to show the different flex for themselves too, because it's got that vibe that you're talking about, but it's not like The Office or Brooklyn.
Yeah, where it's just like joke. It's right, more of like a deeper understanding to it, I guess.
It's
right?
There's some absurdity. Don't get it wrong, but yeah, definitely. You know, we go into story.
There's a lot, and for those of you that have seen the trailer, there's a lot of like very funny lines that, and like I took the I would say the more dramatic undertones you can see in the beginning of the trailer, but then like once you get towards the end of it, there's a very funny line where you say like we don't know what Nemo's mom was up to before
the movie started.
The movie starts, and there's a lot of very funny stuff like that in the trailer, which I really liked. What is the pressure like getting the lead role in not only just this series but in any series? What's the pressure like for you?
You know, it's I've been prepared for like trained for this. I saw Bernie Mac in action. I was on his show. I saw Larry David. Years of Steve Carell. You know, so it's like I've been watching, and you know, okay, well, so here I am. I wouldn't say it's pressure because I'm ready for it. Now, a couple years earlier, I might have been like, "What in the world?" But you know, and I've had some shots. You know, I had a Mr. Robinson show, and I was on Ghosted. But this one's hitting a little different. This is interesting. I can't wait to see what the people think.
Love to hear that.
In general, for you though, like what is more maybe I guess fun? Is it like kind of the side roles where you can almost have like I'm thinking because like some are like I guess the side role. Like I'm thinking like This Is the End or like or a Hot Tub Time Machine. Those are obviously movies, but a little more kind of like the main ensemble. But then you kind of have like the side roles, like the Pineapple Express. Is there one that you kind of go, you know what? I can have a little more fun with this one.
Well, this is more fun because you get to stretch out all the different muscles. You know, you get to be dramatic and, you know, and funny and this, that, and other. But when I was first getting into, you know, eyeing getting into the business, yeah, it was always the side guy. It was like you come in, hit him like an assassin, and step out. So I see exactly what you're saying, but I think that as I grow, this part is way more fun.
Mm-hmm. It does seem like that's one thing that I think as an actor would always be fun is if because you see every now and then like someone who's more traditionally used to like lead roles, they'll go and do like a side role and they're like, wow, this is like all I want to do because I have a really concentrated small punch. But like you're saying, I feel like as an actor, when you get to flex all over the place, like not just like that one specific, you know, micro muscle, you get to like kind of expand and like show everyone else what else you can do.
Yeah, you get a taste of like I want to do some more drama. I've got a couple of those under my belt, but it's definitely, you know, as I get, you know, accustomed to it, I want to get some more. It's nice to be able to, you know, take your time and do something. You know, comedy, you got that timing. So this is a crazy show because it's got both. You know, it takes some dark turns, man. It takes some dark turns on this show. And
Do you find yourself maybe now, because like obviously the beauty of these streaming platforms, and we've seen it with so many, I think comedy especially, you really have such a wider lane to go. Like we talked about the NBC shows, but like they're network shows like The Office, like Parks, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You can only kind of fit into a certain lane where these streaming platforms now, it's like, you're fucking crazy.
Exactly right. The streaming is where it's at. And you do get to stretch out. You do get to say more things. The Brooklyn guys, Dan Gore, Luke Del Tredici, the writers, they were so happy to sprinkle cuss words. To a point where I was like, hey, we don't need that right there. That's saying good morning. So it's a lot going on. And it's a lot of fun.
I think as a comedic actor, is it more liberating doing like a show, like a series versus a movie comedically or even dramatically, anything, because you get just to sort of expand on a character more over time versus in a movie where it's like you only have this much runtime in order to get people to understand what your character is?
It works very interesting, because like in a movie you might have we might film your coverage all day, right? Mm-hmm. And then turn around and film mine. And by the time we get to mine, I've improvised. I know, you know, so now I got all this ammo to unload on screen versus TV or streaming. You know, you the same thing, but you got more of a schedule. You got to keep it moving. So I might go home thinking, I should have said it like that. Should have done that. But that's really all about doing your homework anyway. You got to mind the scene for everything you can.
I think we're going to ask one last question about this before we like move on a little bit and then loop our way all the way back to killing it. Would you agree that people that keep snakes and other reptiles are a little bit weird?
I don't know. I'm thinking about getting, you know, I used to have turtles.
Okay. So turtles are like, that's like G-rated. Okay, that's fine.
But you know what? I'm weird, so I'm going to have to go with, yes, weird, sure.
A good weird sometimes. I know, what is it, Dwight Howard owns like 500 snakes or something like that?
Okay,
like,
see, that's different. That's another level.
Yeah, maybe one too many snakes at that point. We'll have to talk to you about so much of your growth. We're such great fans of yours, so is our audience.
Thank you.
One thing we'd love to talk about is a movie that we really love, which is Hot Tub Time Machine, which you mentioned a minute ago. Truly a very random group of actors in retrospect. It's like, with a lot of the other movies you're in, it's like people that have kind of flown together in similar flight paths. But like the group, the four main guys that you had in that movie were so, I feel like, random and from sort of different groupings. How did you guys like kind of build chemistry for that?
Oh, man. Well, we were shooting in Vancouver, and it starts with respect. And everybody loved and respect Cusack. And I was meeting Cordry and Clark Duke. Yeah, so it was random. I like to say, I know everybody. I know that no one went into Hot Tub Time Machine thinking this was going to be good. I know that. I know you didn't. You either watched it on the airplane or your remote wasn't working or something.
I had to convince people for a year, for a while. Yes. Like, it was, I'm like, you got to watch this. And someone's like, really? I said, just trust me.
Thank you. But I realized that. But, you know, as far as building chemistry, man, we had our rehearsals. You get out there and then everybody just does what they do. And you hope for the best. And it worked out.
And we really, really love it. I think there's something like, we think it is one of the more underappreciated comedies of recent memory. And I think most of that is just because, like we were both saying, it's like you have to go back in retrospect and be like, no, you should watch this. This isn't like some like throwaway thing. Like, right. You got to watch this movie. And you're in another movie like that, which we defend all the time, which is Dewey Cox, which is like that one.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's a movie we have to defend nonstop and be like, you have to watch this movie. It's one of the best comedies of this era. Wow. It's tough to... Awesome. Sometimes you got to get people over the hump for that. But there's a couple bits in that movie that are all hilarious. I think the one thing that we love the most, right, had to be the Crispin Glover arm bit, right? I think that's...
I mean, that's got to be... Is there a... Like, in terms of recent comedies, is there a better running gag?
I don't know. I'm glad to hear it. You know, I wasn't even supposed to be in Walk Hard. Mm-hmm. Jerry Minor had that part, but then I think he got it. If memory serves, he got a part on... The caveman show, remember that?
Oh, no way, the Geico caveman show?
Right, right. So then Shauna Robinson, who produces with Apatow and stuff, she was like, hey, you want to do this part? And I was like, yes. And I became, what's his name in the Dewey Cox story?
Yeah.
Who was actually the name of Judd Apatow's grandfather. I can't think of
something. Shand, I think.
Yeah, Bobby Shand. Shand. Yeah, well done, sir.
I definitely didn't look it up beforehand. Don't worry.
The Geico Caveman show might be one of the most fascinating relics of like network TV of all time.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Just to even like explaining that to anybody who doesn't know that exists. And there was also like a really that came out around the same time that I think there was like an animated show about the lion, the Siegfried and Roy tigers, excuse me. Or lions? Did I get that wrong?
The tigers. The tigers. And then I guess and then the tiger attacked one of them.
Yep.
And so the show went away.
That show did. That show, yeah, the animation lost its charm. Is the mark of being a memorable time machine movie the fact that they referenced it in Avengers Endgame, the biggest movie of all time?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, that had to be, like, that's, like, look, like, a winning an Oscar might have been bigger, but, like, it was up there with Back to the Future. Like, that was huge.
Bro, you know, they actually showed it on 30 Rock one time, too. Like they showed them leaving the movie theater to say hot tub time machine. So it's there's definitely a jolt. Like what did I just?
Yep.
You heard? Yes. Yeah. It definitely there's a jolt and it feels good.
It's like part of the MCU canon and mythology that Captain America watched hot tub time machine and like all these superheroes watched hot tub time machine, which is kind of awesome.
I forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me.
Other comedies you're in, just in general, do you have? And this is a daunting task to ask you this, but I do have one. I have my own, so I'm curious if you have one for you. Just follow the like from the Pineapple Expresses to the This Is the End. Do you have a favorite maybe improv line, favorite scene, one thing that you were like that is one of the funniest things I've ever been a part of from those movies?
Well, there's this I improvised. So in Hot Tub Time Machine, we were filming, and I said to Steve Pink, hey, what if, because Clark Duke was supposed to say, must be some kind of hot tub time machine. But I said to Steve, I was like, what if I said it and then looked in the camera? Steve was like, I like that. And the next morning, we were filming it. So I was so proud of that moment because it made the trailer, and then, you know, people would still laugh in the theaters as if they were waiting for that line. And so that's one. I got some, you know, like Knocked Up was pretty much the top half of that monologue was Judd Apatow, and the bottom half was me saying stuff like, you know, black midget and old pregnant bitches, you old she pregnant candle, old pregnant bitches running around. Yep. You know, so, there are a few, for sure. And it's the hugest kick when somebody yells in a line that I improv out to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Most people just yell the names of the movies or whatever. Hot tub! Office, Daryl. When they come up with a line,
I'll tell you mine in a second. But is we're like we love The Office. We're just not talking The Office today because I feel like that's the thing you get the most
every day for you. Anytime you do it,
is it the basketball for you? Like, what is it though? Like, what is the one that people point out the most?
The Office episode. You know, I think nowadays is the song. Out of paper, out of stock. You know, the people, person, paper, people. Like people, you know, people trip over that. They just say The Office. They'll try to do the song or call that one out.
My line for you, and I want to know if it's improv or not, is from Pineapple Express when you stick your hand in the food and you say, food's still warm.
I love it. that, my friend, is Mr. David Gordon Green, who is also directing these Pizza Hut commercials you see. But David Gordon Green is so dope and he's weird. He's brilliant. And so we were rehearsing. David was going to rehearsal with Kevin and I, who's my... Everybody was partnered up in Pineapple Express, right? So you had Seth and
Seth
Franco.
And Franco, yeah.
Me and Kevin and then... Rosie Perez and who's the
I always forget the guy's name. Apologies.
Who's the cop?
I always want to say his name is like something with a Faulkner, but I don't think that's right.
I can't think. No disrespect. So we were just the three of us, David and then Kevin and I, and he was like, and we were talking about it, and we didn't have any food. And he was like, okay, now put your hands in the mac and cheese. I say, food still warm. Say I love it. Like that was all David Gordon Green. So then when we got to that, oh my God. Yes, I love that part. But it was It was straight scripted from David Gordon Green adding it.
His like filmography is one of the wildest.
Crazy.
For his start, which it's a Criterion movie, I have it, and I actually got it because Barry Jenkins has talked about this. George Washington.
Which
yeah. It came out in 2000. Then from all the way to which now, I mean, Righteous Gemstones on the funny. I mean, all those shows,
yeah, the Halloweens,
yeah, and Pizza Hut commercials. Like it's insane.
So that's why the Pizza Hut commercials are like popping. Like it's my own little series. Because we'll get on set, and he'd be like, okay. Because one thing he did in Pineapple Express, I forget which scene, but he was like, okay, say like Oprah. Like I, when I think it was, I synced it, that scene. He was like, say like Oprah. Okay, now say like a Baptist preacher. Okay, so he kept saying it. And so I forget which take he kept, but it was like, when he gets options.
That's awesome. That's so funny. So I feel like you've done a lot of these movies with like these, I would say like, we call them Apatow adjacent, but like Apatow may or may not be involved. It's basically like Seth Rogen adjacent movies. But like This Is the End, obviously Pineapple Express, Zack and Miri, Sausage Party, all of these ones. What is the movie making experience like with that group of people?
It's like being on the team and knowing everybody, knowing, you know, like trusting, like trust. Mm-hmm. If I throw you the ball, I know you're gonna score. You know I'm gonna score. I know where to get you the ball. You know, it's like that. So, like even when I think when This Is the End started, it wasn't much for me to do, but we found it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We got like who's anybody want this dick? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that kind of stuff wasn't in there, but we found it. You know what I mean? So it's like that. It's like having your squad that you can always rely on.
Yep. Love that.
So we like to do this with guests. You have a unique name where we can do this with a couple different avenues. We do a bracket. We're going to put you in the bracket, and you have to decide the winner of the bracket. We're going to do it's a bracket of best Craigs and Robinsons. So it's but
final vote.
There's a bit of a game breaker here. We're going to pretend that Jackie Robinson and Smokey Robinson retired because I just feel like that's unfair. It can just mean okay, they're the top of those games. So here we go. I'm gonna throw it up on the screen here. All right, first matchup at the top: Daniel Craig against Ann Robinson, the former host of Weakest Link.
Daniel Craig.
Mm-hmm.
No offense. I mean, great catchphrase from Ann Robinson.
Love Ann Robinson, but you know, I mean, we're talking about Bond here.
Mm-hmm.
Next matchup: David Robinson against Craig T. Nelson, the general against coach,
the admiral.
To one of the lines from Coach.
Yeah,
remember the older guy?
Mm-hmm.
He said, they're talking about the buffet. He was like, yeah, they say all you can eat, but they always stop you at 12. give me David Robinson.
Legend himself. All right, so Robinson moves on. Next matchup, Craig Ferguson against Tim Robinson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wow, a tough that's one. Tough.
Too funny, man.
I'm going to go Tim Robinson, man. He's so funny. That,
I think you should leave. You think,
oh my God, it's too good.
We've interviewed a few.
We might have given you a cakewalk for your matchup.
Uh oh.
It's you against Jerick Robbins, who I learned 15 minutes ago is the son of motivational speaker Tony Robbins, so Tony Robbins' son.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go me.
Now you're
all right. So this is the big moment. So this is a big. It's a big how much you want to be humble. Josh Gad, for example, has been the all-time not humble. Josh Gad took down every Josh possible. You play Tim Robinson here, Daniel Craig versus David Robinson. Who wins out of this final four? Who's the best, Craig or Robinson?
Oh, my gosh. Give me Tim and Daniel. Jeez, I didn't even pick any black people. Let's go. And then, you know what? I got to go Daniel. No, you're Craig.
He's Bond.
He's Bond.
And he can also be funny.
Yeah.
You know, and
Knives Out, Knives so Out, funny.
You know, he's a beast.
Logan Lucky, too. He was so funny.
And Bond, he was like, what makes you think it's my first time? Remember that? Yeah.
Yep. He's got the full package.
All right.
We have one more thing we want to do.
Well, Final Four, that's big for you, though. Yeah. Final Four is always good to make.
Yeah, I made
Put
it.
Put up a band.
Yeah.
I lost to myself, and I was picking.
We have one more thing we like to do with guests. We call it six pack. It's just a six pack of questions.
I'm not sure on my stomach. I can't handle my midriff.
I was saying, who wants a six pack when you can have a keg? It's so much
exactly,
better.
Exactly, yes.
First question, what comedy do you think is the funniest or most influential?
Whoa, what?
Very easy one, right?
What comedy movie do I think is the funniest or most influential? Are we going like
just to you, let's say.
I'm going to go which way is up, Richard Pryor.
Oh, wow, yeah. Great call. Actually, Richard Pryor was just in last episode of Winning Time, right? They had an actor playing him talking to Magic Johnson. That was pretty cool.
Cool.
Next question, Eastbound and Down. Has one of the funniest blooper reels I think ever put to screen ever. Specifically, one part with you and Danny McBride face to face and Will Ferrell going, "I feel it in my plums." Uh-huh. How many takes did it take until you finished that scene?
I couldn't even tell you, but I think they just let the camera roll and figure it out. But Will was trying to murder us, and I want you to imagine looking in Danny McBride's eyes. So any twink, anything.
A twitch, yeah.
It was over. It was over. I had tears, man.
Oh, that it's one of the funniest bloopers I think I've ever seen. Every single time I watch it, it makes me laugh. Because you two try not to laugh.
It makes me laugh hard. So, yeah, I get it. Well, I'm glad to get it.
Is there any role that you auditioned for, really, really wanted, but didn't get? Like, one that's like your biggest one, like, I really wish I got that one.
I mean, back then, yes, but... Here's the thing about that. Like, there was stuff that if I got it, like, I wouldn't have had the office, you know what I'm saying, and stuff like that. So it all was like, oh, good thing I didn't get that. But I did audition for a 40-Year-Old Virgin. Audition for this. I can't go over 1,000. I don't know. What? The Hangover.
Okay.
Yeah. Didn't get that. I didn't really audition.
What would you have been in The Hangover?
I think Ed's character.
Oh, really? Yeah. You would have been like the dentist, right? Yeah. Interesting. That would have been a cool ad. Okay, we got one more.
Well, I got a note, though. Every time somebody leaves an interview with us, they announce a big role.
Yes.
So I just hope you're not hiding.
Well, because we've been fucked by this so many times.
It's good for the interviewee, but typically whenever somebody leaves an interview, and this is not even a joke at this point. Like, it's Marvel roles. It's... or Oppenheimer with Christopher Nolan. So I just want to throw that out there. I don't know if you're hiding like a secret big role from us.
It's like,
but
you're an hour from now, is there going to be some big announcement like Craig Robinson cast in Oppenheimer or something? Like, because this is literally the last like five interviews.
Craig Robinson is Othello. I got this April 22nd. This movie's coming out called The Bad Guys. It's an animated movie. It's like Tarantino for kids. It's pretty dope.
What a pitch.
But then killing it. Do I have anything, Mark?
Nothing that you can
my
say?
My manager, ladies and gentlemen. No, I got nothing for you.
Yeah, you're going to be like, it's going to be like Thanos 2.
Yeah, exactly.
Find out in like 20 minutes out. Yeah.
An hour from now, we're going to hear that for sure.
But I promise you, it will have happened after this. If that comes up.
Okay, next question. Were Jim and Pam even a good couple? This has been a big up for debate recently. I've always
toxic.
Thought, no. I thought they were terrible.
Super toxic.
He bought a house without even asking her.
Without asking her. And she's like, okay. And then she started, like, she like almost dated two other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
She went to the other office.
Went to the other office and dated. What's his name?
And Roy was like, yeah, you were the friend, too. Remember that?
Yep.
And then there was this camera guy. What was that at the end?
Yeah, that's right.
Breaking the fourth wall with the camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that?
They were a bad couple. She just didn't know what was on the other side of the rainbow. Okay, you can press a button, and I don't know what your favorite sports team is, but you can press a button and get the green light. Oh, wait, no, that's actually, I forgot we asked this one. Okay, so you can press a button, and you can instantly get the green light on whatever project you want, but you instantly go bald. And not the good bald, the bad bald, where it's like wispy and gross.
What? Well, what's the question?
So you can press this button, but if you press the button, you can instantly get the green light in any project you want, anything that you have your mind on, but you instantly go bald and the bad type of bald.
The bad type of bald, which is, what's bad bald?
Like LeBron James wispy hair bald, like really bad.
Okay, so what's the question? Would I press the button?
Would you press the button?
No. I can't. No, with this afro.
You have great hair, which is why I asked you this.
the golden project, too? Like, your number one, like, you could play any character role? No, not worth it?
No, not just... I love my.
Yeah, you have like a, you have this show on Peacock debuting. You got like
exactly.
Yeah. <it's...
laughs> but if I did, I would just go all the way. I wouldn't even.
Yeah, that's,
would I have to keep it like
you
would
could,
I have to,
you could not
yeah,
shave
no,
it.
Yeah, no razors.
Could not shave
I couldn't
it.
Couldn't shave it. Oh, no.
All right, this is the last question. This is the hardest one, and we've had people walk out on this question because they're nice. Like, "Well, I'm not going to answer this. It's too controversial." Which is better, the Bloomin' Onion or Bang Bang Shrimp?
I'm gonna go Bang Bang.
Bang Bang from Bonefish Grill.
Come on.
Mm-hmm. That Bang Bang sauce. What? I don't even know what it is. It's some sort of aioli or what?
I don't know. But Bang Bang Shrimp's been another. And what's your? Do you have a favorite chain restaurant?
I don't think I've had either Bloomin' or Bang Bang, but I just went with the shrimp because I don't usually eat the onions.
Mm.
Favorite chain restaurant? I mean,
no, that's not bad. That's not. I don't think it's a bad pick at all.
No, that's a good pick.
About
an hour ago.
Yeah,
delicious.
It's fake corner.
It's fake healthy.
Oh yeah. Wait, the answer has actually been redacted and switched to Pizza Hut.
Oh, Pizza Hut. That's what
yes. I meant. That's
right. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
We bleeped that out. We bleeped out the first one, and now it's going to leave an absolute pretzel. Our audience have no idea what you said before that. It's going
to
kill them.
You drive your Dodge car to the Pizza Hut.
To Walmart.
Exactly. To Walmart first, and then,
get some Tostitos and Pizza Hut.
Yeah, and then you
while the audio version of all Peacock shows are streaming in your car, because it's safe, you don't want to watch it. Killing It, April 14th on Peacock. Thank you so much. This was an. Anything else you want to say about the show? You have like a short elevator pitch you want to give to anybody listening?
Hey, check it out.
I'm Craig Robinson, and I endorse
enjoy
this
it, man.
Message.
If not, then watch it anyway. Thank you.
Thank you so much, pleasure, man. We really appreciate
thank you.
It.
Catch you in the studio next time.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Thanks to Craig Robinson. Very interesting bit he told us, Chris. I asked him what movie role he auditioned for but didn't get, and like one he really, really wanted. He apparently almost got the role of Ed Helms' character from The Hangover.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was probably a bit awkward on set of The Office a few months later. But yeah, I could see it. Well, it's weird, though, because he ended up doing Hot Tub Time Machine,
yep.
which is kind of in the same vein of, you know, four guys trying to solve a mystery, which is a movie I love and think is grossly
he was very and funny about that movie because
yes.
we brought it up and he goes, don't lie, fellas. You guys, you thought this movie was going to be shit.
Yeah.
Because everyone was like, Hot Tub Time Machine? That sounds stupid as shit.
Mm-hmm. And that movie ruled.
It was awesome. Second one,
that's
very
one of
ridiculous,
the funniest fucking movies. But yeah, the biggest issue with that movie is that it came out several months after The Hangover.
Yeah,
and it was
there
like,
was too many funny comedies in that 5-year gap where
yeah.
a lot of
yeah,
shit
no.
just fell through the crease,
through cracks. Yeah,
yeah.
That
yeah.
we talked to him about a lot of the scenes. He told us how he actually it was his improv. The scene where he looks into the camera and goes, "Must be some sort of hot tub time machine." Like that scene was improv by him. Like he was, I think Clark Duke was supposed to say it off facing the camera. But yeah, super cool interview. Glad we got to talk to him. He also did Barstow Chicago right after us, and he made a joke, which you'll hear it in our interview. But anyway, yeah. let's get into Fantastic Beasts 3, The Secrets of Dumbledore, a movie I know, again, we are super pumped up to watch. Professor Albus Dumbledore knows the powerful dark wizard Gellert Grindelwald is moving to seize control of the wizarding world. Unable to stop him alone, he entrusts magizoologist Newt Scamander to lead an intrepid team of wizards and witches. They soon encounter an array of old and new beasts as they... There's not that many beasts. There's really not that many beasts at all. There's not an array of...
What is this franchise?
So not an array of beasts as they clash with Grindelwald's growing legion of followers. This movie is... I think the best thing that I could possibly say about this movie is that it isn't as bad as its predecessor. But that bar is so low that it's not necessarily like a great thing. And I think that like just as long as we're in non-spoiler thoughts, I think that the best thing I can really say about it besides that is that like there were some improvements on the technical side of things, but like the main issue of the stories and the characters are still there and maybe even worse in this movie. But in non-spoilers, what did you think about it, Chris?
I actually disagree with you.
Okay.
I think this is worse than the last one because... The last one was just so chock full of what the fuckery.
Had a cool ass vape scene.
Yeah, I did have a vape scene, yeah.
He vaped World War II.
No, there's yeah. There, no, isn't there like a reference to like Nazism and stuff too that like or Grindelwald is basically trying to be like
he's gay wizard Hitler.
Wizard Hitler.
Yeah. Right.
Who has a sick bomb.
Yes.
There's one thing about this movie, and this I do agree with you on, Ken Jack, that I do think is better than the previous two. There's a little bit more color to it. Like David Yates, for whatever reason, and I like the Harry Potter movies he directed, he is a sepia tone using motherfucker. Mm-hmm. He loves those fluorescent lights and he loves to just dim the contrast down. There's a little bit more color to this, but I was an hour into this movie. And you know who the true protagonist of this film should be? Is a fucking atomic bomb. Because if it wiped out every one of those characters, I wouldn't give a shit. I hate to go like all red letter media here, but it's a question that needs to be asked. Who's the main character in this series? Who do you have to latch on to? Because I was watching this, and this is a long movie, by the way, and it's so goddamn boring. But about an hour in, I'm like, there are things happening, but I don't care. I don't know any one of these people. And it's been a while since I rewatched the Harry Potter movies. I am, in a weird way, a little bit scared to rewatch them just because they were such a huge part of my childhood. But at the same time, I do know by the time you got to the end of that series, you were really emotionally attached to Harry, Hermione, and Ron, and fucking Neville, like all these characters. With this, I don't care about anyone in this movie. And I don't really understand what the premise is either, and maybe I just didn't care enough to really pay close enough attention. But man, I think these movies, to me, I think I tweeted out, these films are like the cinematic equivalent of applesauce, because it's just it's not that they're horribly made necessarily on a technical level, but they're just so bland. They very much are to this, to Harry Potter, what Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones were to Star Wars.
Yeah.
The difference is, at least those movies, like, as misguided and as weird as they were, had a vision. Like George Lucas, that was George Lucas's story. Here, this is just J.K. Rowling, like, I don't know. It seems like she was just huffing glue and decided to write a script in between problematic tweets, because this thing is – this. It's not going to be the worst movie of the year, because it does – you know, it looks pretty, but it's bad. And the other big problem too is the one thing I thought we could come out of this saying was, hey, you know what? Jude Law and Mads Mikkelsen, they were pretty good together. And they're good actors – but they're bored. There's not a single actor in this movie that doesn't look like they're just dying to collect a paycheck. Yep. So, yeah, just a bad, bad film, bad series, man. And I'm sure it'll do well overseas, but I really wish this series would just die.
Did have the worst weekend, I think, of any Harry Potter movie, but that's not like a huge indicator post-COVID, I feel like.
True, but I do believe, especially after the second one, the interest that people have in this universe, it's just not there anymore. And it's kind of – it's retconned and ruined a lot of what made those original movies good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, guys, I got to be honest, haven't seen the movie yet. But because of that, I'm going to have a lot of questions in the spoiler section, because you just said atomic bomb.
Which there is no – there's no exploded atomic bomb. So you
the
don't
fact
worry
that
about
we're
that.
Bringing in atomic bombs into a Harry Potter universe – I love Harry Potter. I read through the books probably once every few years, every couple years. Me and my sister used to fight over the books. We would get it at midnight and then just basically tear through the book in 8 hours. She would get it first, then I would go through it. I think J.K. Rowling is a terrific writer. Despite any problematic things she's ever said, there's no denying that she built the world that is incredible. That initial run of movies was incredible. I don't think she should have been the one writing these movies at all. I'm not sure if she should have decided to go with Newt Scamander as a direction for the franchise. I think it would have been more interesting just, why don't we just go to Dumbledore's old days? Or just skip ahead, even though the Cursed Child stuff sucked, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, the interest level for this franchise was dead on arrival almost, even for Harry Potter fans, because who cares about
Newt Scamander.
Yeah. Even if his name had been changed, I think it might have helped a little bit. But even then, I just wasn't ever interested in this world. And I didn't want them to be American either.
Yeah.
Harry Potter needs – it's one of those things. It needs to be British.
Yep.
You need – I think they all need to be British. It's cool when you get to see them interact with other countries, but – The main characters need to be British.
And they can't be going, and I feel like America shouldn't be one. Like, go to, like, France, see French wizards, see German wizards, whatever.
Well, and they did in Goblet of Fire. I mean,
and that was one of the best things.
The Romanian wizards or whatever, and the French.
That's funny. Are there any American characters in the original eight or seven books?
I don't think so.
I don't think there's a single one.
I don't think America's even referenced.
I don't even think they have an American actor in those movies.
I'm thinking through it. I can't think of a single one.
No, I'm with you. Yeah, I just – having her write the screenplay I think was a mess. But even beyond that, the films as a whole, those Harry Potter movies, the original eight, they're engaging movies, and they have unique stories and good characters. Nothing about this is gripping at all. I just don't care about anything that's going on. I don't care about these characters. And it suffers from the one instance, you know, that a lot of prequels suffer from is like, you know how this ends. Like, there's no real conflict or tension when you know this just leads to the first Harry Potter movie. So you're not on the edge of your seat worried about if Dumbledore is going to die. You know he's going to survive. You know everything's going to be fine. So, yeah, just a lame duck of a movie.
And that's where, like, it almost compares to – you had mentioned the prequel trilogy. Like, in the prequel trilogy, you weren't interested to see if, like, Anakin survived. You want to see how he turns. And, like, that's the big thing you're waiting for. And, like, they don't have that moment here. Like, Dumbledore's not going to have some sort of giant crisis of faith here. I think for me, when I broke this – I kind of broke this movie down into pros and cons. And there are actually a few pros. I think that the magic and the magic fights look better. They probably look the best out of any of the Harry Potter movies.
I agree.
The VFX – super on point. I still think the creatures kind of look like ass, and for a movie that's touting itself on Fantastic Beasts, I think the visual effects on the beasts is pretty poor. Like, they look very, like, and I don't expect it to look like a photorealistic animal or anything like that, but, like, they just look very fake. Mads Mikkelsen I thought was better as Grindelwald, but, like, I think part of that, if not most of that, is the fact that they made Depp in the last movie kind of look like a freakazoid. Like, that, like, pale spiky white hair and like the double the heterochromia, but like,
I mean, he looked like a guy that would vape out of a skull.
Exactly, he was a skull vapor guy. But Mads Mikkelsen they made look like a quintessential sexy European, and like that one I think just worked better for the character of Grindelwald, but also shows you how they had no real cohesion between these movies. Like, that this version of Grindelwald is entirely different in not only look because it's a different actor, but in actual function between the two movies. And that was very frustrating. And I think that the movie, I agree with you that it was long, but it felt relatively brief or at least shorter than they originally planned. And I think that you get the sense that during editing, they were like, we should give this a little more finality and less cliffhangers because we don't know if this movie is going to go, this franchise is going to go any further than this or if we're just going to cancel it here. Because I feel like, I don't know if you got this too, but I got the sense while watching it that like this was like a 2.5 hour, 2:45 planned movie because there was this, like, it felt like things were compressed a little bit, and at the same time still long, which isn't good for them.
The finale did feel a little bit – yeah, I'm with – I see that. I think there's so much still that you could have cut out, but yeah.
On Twitter basically say it felt like the last – and so I haven't seen the movie, but they said it felt like the last 15 minutes was a lot of reshoots that they had gone back and done basically to wrap up these storylines because they're like, this franchise is just finito. Like, we're not going to do a 4. We're not going to do a 5. Wrap this shit up. We're done.
Which there is a part of me that does appreciate that. Like,
yeah, like at least they're going to recognize.
I think everyone involved in this is aware that they're like, this is a dead fish of a film series. Like, no one's really like engaged in this anymore. So it's like, let's just wrap this shit up and go home.
It kind of sucks too for like Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah.
I mean,
good actor.
A world class actor. I know we kind of crap on him all the time. But, you know, he probably signed on to this thinking, this is massive. Yeah. Like, this is like, I'm about to be the biggest star in the world. I'm going to be like the next Daniel Radcliffe. Everyone will know my face. Everyone will know my name. No one gives a shit.
He's an actor. When people talk about actors who've really struggled after winning Academy Awards, he's one of the first that comes to mind. Because he is a good actor and he's given good performances and other things. Now, obviously, Jupiter Ascending was before he won the Oscar. But since then, it's like you're waiting. Yeah, you're right, Gooch. It's like you're waiting for him to be in, like, lead a franchise and be that successful.
I'm sure he thought this was it.
You would have to. I doubt, and I don't even mean this as an insult. I doubt he read the script. Like, if you found out, I get to be the lead in the Harry Potter prequel, I'm taking it without even thinking about it. And
You know what it kind of reminds me of? In this last weekend, I was watching the Heat versus Hawks game, and the Heat were blowing him out by like 30. And I was thinking, like, what's the motive? I feel like it's got to be really hard to be motivated when you're one of the players on the Hawks, just knowing like there's zero chance you're going to win this game, and there's still like a quarter and a half of basketball to play. Like, and that's the sort of sense that, like, like I got watching a lot of the actors in this, where it's like that same feeling. It's like they know that they're this is a losing effort, but it's like they just need to get it done and get the paycheck. But yeah, like I said before, I broke it down into sort of pros and cons. Those are the few pros I could find. But on the con list, I think the biggest problem with this movie is that there's just way too many goddamn characters. And it's, like you said, Chris, so goddamn hard to care about them at all. And like the quirked up little white boy, Newton Artemis Fido Scamander, he's just not likable. Not likable at all. And it feels almost inexplicable at this point in the franchise that in this world of infinite magic and craziness that they really make a huge effort to keep the extremely regular Kowalski involved. Right? Like the non-magical guy. Okay. We're in the magical world.
Are we in the spoiler section?
And then we're going into spoilers now. Yeah,
let's go.
Let's mark it.
How the fuck is he using a wand?
Yeah, that was...
That is something I don't try to get too upset about stuff going against canon when I'm like a fan of the books or like a fan of the lore. Just some random-ass muggle picking up a wand. They showed it in the trailer. So him picking up a wand, just using it, like that shouldn't be... That's not a thing. It's just not. And it, for it to be him, Jacob Kowalski...
Yeah, the baker.
It's almost offensive.
The American baker.
If it was Josh Gad, I would have liked it, but...
I think it's one of those issues you run into when the person who's writing these scripts is the person who created the universe and probably feels like, you know what, it's my lore. I can pick and choose what's, you know, what can stick and what doesn't. Because you're right, like, it's been well established that that's not something that should happen.
George Lucas picks the lore in such a more fun way, though.
Yeah, exactly.
True, but it's like midichlorians, where it's like, wait, why? Yeah. I know it's like your universe,
but you can be wrong about
really
it.
Really unnecessary, yeah.
I think one of the other character problems with me is that like Jude Law is okay as Dumbledore, but I feel like the way that they portray Dumbledore in these movies is just like we've seen like not only one but two really good versions of Dumbledore in both Richard Harris's and Michael Gambon's, but like his version is just not really similar to either of their versions of all as far as like how he does character. He's just kind of like a whiny asshole, and like I don't really like that about that portrayal. And like in addition to these characters being super hard to connect to, I think that they added so much more in this movie. Like the existing characters you're rolling into this third movie with, they're already having their own issues, and they added like 10 more main roles onto this movie, which is I just can't understand any of the thinking behind that at all. And we kind of mentioned this already, but like the Mr. Sunday movie's joke about gay wizard Hitler is really magnified when you sort of insert Grindelwald into proto-Nazi Germany and make the whole like setting of it being like the German Ministry of Magic and all that shit.
Wait, there's... Stop.
So like they're legit, like, and they have like that statue of the Nazi soldier.
The listeners. I'm like an idiot right now because I didn't watch the movie. I'm going to. It just isn't at the top of my list. I was doing other things this week and the weather was nice. They are Nazi wizards in this movie.
They're in Nazi Germany. They're all in, I guess, Weimar Republic, but like I don't remember, really know what year this is. But they're in Germany, and mostly this movie takes place, if I'm correct, like in the German Ministry of Magic. Like that's their big thing. And like there's a lot of Nazi allusions. Grindelwald is very clearly supposed to be like the Nazi guy, and like he's supposed to be like kind of revving him up in that same sort of sense. And like it's one of those things where, like, we know Grindelwald's bad. You don't need to, like, associate him with Nazis for us to understand he's a bad guy. Like, it's just totally unnecessary. And I think that one of the big twists of this movie, or quote-unquote twist, is that Credence, played by Ezra Miller, is Albus Dumbledore's nephew, versus being his younger brother. And that had zero punch to it. That had no punch whatsoever.
There's zero emotional attachment to any of these characters. And also, and I'm not just saying this because... You know, he's a well-documented weirdo and violent in real life, allegedly.
Yeah.
But Ezra Miller sucks in these movies.
Yeah.
He's not good at – he's totally flat. I mean, Robbie got, like, some criticism for saying he thought that he was playing Snape. Yeah. But Snape intentionally has a little personality until you get to the end and realize, wow, this was actually, like, his purpose the whole time. Mm-hmm. This guy is just so bland. I mean, he's just adds nothing.
He just stands there clenching his jaw in the first two movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean...
That's all he does in this one, dude. And then you get this ridiculous twist of, hey, I'm your nephew. And you're right. It doesn't really go anywhere. They try to have some sort of, you know, emotional punch at the end. But, dude, I was either bored... my eyes in the last like 20 minutes of this movie.
It meant nothing because like essentially like he's like, Dumbledore, I'm literally gonna kill your ass because you're actually my brother. And then he's like, oh well, you're actually my nephew. And he's like, okay, you're my best friend now. Like it made like what was the fucking flip there? Like it made
it's like Sonic and Knuckles teaming up at the end of Sonic 2. It's like it had that level emotional investment by the end of it, and that's a movie made for children.
Exactly. Just zero punch to that at all. And like that, I guess his whole purpose was to, at the end, break the bond between Grindelwald, the blood bond between Grindelwald and Dumbledore. And like even that, like it just did not. It lacked the punch. And like they again, another character, it was Aberforth, Dumbledore's brother, is actually the illegitimate. So Credence is the illegitimate son of Dumbledore's brother. And like that was supposed to be like a big emotional punch too. Nothing to that at all. And just it really, every part of this movie fell flat except for on the technical end as far as VFX go with the wizard fights. Because I thought that the showdown between Grindelwald and Dumbledore I thought was really cool. I thought the fight between Credence and Dumbledore was really cool as well. But that's basically it. Like some of the creature work was okay, like the manticore or whatever was like interesting until they went up to do the little like the dance thing, you know what I mean? Like that was goofy for a second and then they just kept going on with it. And this is probably the smallest problem with the movie, right? But the controversies surrounding it definitely made the movie incrementally less likable.
Weird controversies, too.
Yeah.
Because not only do you have Johnny Depp's if you don't know about the Johnny Depp stuff,
yeah,
you know, getting replaced. But then you got Ezra Miller just fucking it all up for like just the past year while the movie's already made. They can't do anything. I mean, they're probably $100 million deep on that project by now. There's nothing you can do just pull him out of that. Yeah. And so now you got just an actual terrible guy. And then you have the controversy of Johnny Depp, who may or may not have done something bad. Johnny Depp comes off as a bit of a weirdo to me, mm-hmm. too, but that's for you to decide. So it's just like going in, it just felt weird. And then you have obviously the gay rights stuff with the, I don't know if you guys have been following that, where mm-hmm. it's like they've pulled any LB or, you know, any gay scenes from the movie in China. Which was apparently only 10 minutes or like 5 minutes.
There was barely any gay scenes in this movie. It was just kind of Dumbledore saying he loves Grindelwald. He's like, I was in love with you.
And it was totally a throwaway. Well,
they should not have made that poster.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
Yeah. That's misleading marketing on their end.
That is a movie this year.
So there's nothing with they don't really explore that relationship at all.
I don't think, right? I don't remember seeing them kiss at all. They just kind of had that one scene in the diner.
No, it's just the opening scene.
I mean, I'm not begging for a sex scene, but I mean, if you've been reading Harry Potter books, you've been part of the fandom, this has been one of the more discussed things, if not the most discussed thing around Dumbledore forever, is that he was gay.
Mm-hmm. And then all we really got was
not to explore it is kind of, I feel like, just a missed opportunity on a storyline that'd be probably more interesting than Jacob Kowalski or not actually keep the German wizards in there. I can't move past that.
The Nazi wizards.
I also think the whole Dumbledore is gay thing, the one issue that I have, not if he's gay, and so what? That's fine.
Yeah.
I just, what bothers me is that I know of, and I only read, I think, maybe one of the books. It was a long time ago when I was a kid. There was rarely ever any implication that Dumbledore was gay in the books that I know of. And it was just J.K. Rowling in an interview 10 years ago. It was like, oh, by the way, he's gay. It's like,
well, right before the last book came out, she said it. Right. And so everyone was just kind of like,
To me, that's really lame. Because if you want it to be part of your canon,
put it in the book.
Write
it in.
Write about it in the book. So it just feels so cheap to just pull that card out, like, after you've finished writing your series, just going, oh, by the way, this character that you, like,
this series,
and then you just kind of.
Yeah.
Would have been a lot better as just a young Dumbledore series. Just explore young Dumbledore coming up.
Yeah, which I think they've tried to turn it into now after the first move, but it just reeks of phoniness. You're right. Like,
they're monetizing the social aspect of it. Like, it's like, it's not like she's made Dumbledore gay because she always wanted Dumbledore to be gay. She did it because she thought it would like help book sales and like it would be like more progressive of her book to have that. Even in the book where the little creatures that run all the banks in the world are like Nazi caricatures of Jews.
Yeah, not great.
Definitely trying to help out her image there. So like the J.K. Rowling turf stuff obviously doesn't help. The Depp drama is horrible. The Ezra Miller stuff. But also, I don't know if you noticed this, Chris, but Catherine Waterston completely absent from this movie, 100%. So
is she in it?
She's a cameo. She's literally just like a cameo at the end of it, like for like 2 seconds.
Okay, all right, because I like her, and so I was waiting for the whole movie. I'm like, when does she show up?
So her character.
Yeah, that's right. There's that little scene at the end. That lends credence to the fact there had to have been more stuff shot for this movie that they ended
up. Yes, but so for her, She's a main character in the first two movies, right? And she's the only Jewish character in the series also. Mm. And Goldstein. So Catherine Waterston like kind of gently slammed J.K. Rowling for like the TERF shit. She's like, oh, you can't be a feminist while excluding trans people. And then like almost immediately after that, she gets downgraded to a cameo. And that's definitely not a coincidence at all that she got written out of that, which is kind of fucked up. But yeah, so there's just like a lot of stuff surrounding it. And again, that's like the least... like the smallest problem with these movies, but it definitely it's hard to go into it without like it making it a little bit less likable. You know what I mean?
You're totally right. If the rest of the movie was well made and you know, like visually it was good and structurally it was sound, it would be okay. But there is a weird aura. These movies have anti charm to them.
Yeah. Like,
weird aura to it where you just get bad vibes while watching it. Now, I don't know if there's any other film series that I can really say that about. So, do you have a rating for it, by the way? I guess I had it at 29.
Yeah, I ended up... Oh, wait, you had a 29?
29?
Yeah, wow.
I really hated this movie.
So I ended up on a 43 for me. Okay. It's above... I think the second one, I think, for me was like a 20... was actually, I think, a 29. So this is like definitely better than that, but for me anyway. And then I had Fantastic Beasts 1 at like, I think, a 60 or something like that. But yeah, so that's where I ended up.
I got a couple questions for y'all before we move on. Are you guys excited for the series, the upcoming Harry Potter series, at all? Like after everything we just went through with these three movies?
Only the video game. I'm excited for the video game. That's it. That's
the series, I'm just kind of like, I guess.
To me, Harry Potter ended. I was 16 years old, and Hallows Part 2 came to an end. And that was the end of the series for me. Mm-hmm, I didn't need to see anything else. And while I've given these movies a fair shake, they've turned out to be exactly what I hoped they wouldn't be. So I'm not against it, but I'm not excited.
And do you think there's any chance that these movies end up like the Star Wars prequels, where there's just a complete revisionist history 15 years from now, 20 years from now, where people go, well, actually, those movies were pretty good for what they were. They were actually pretty good. They were fun.
I think the problem with that is like I think we will get that if we have another Harry Potter trilogy in 20 years.
Well, it's going to happen. Shit on. There's going to be more Harry Potter movies.
Yeah. So like that's kind of what sparked, I think, the prequel revisionism. But also I think that what would hurt it is the fact that like I view this trilogy more like the sequel trilogy of Star Wars, where like the three movies execution is like okay, but there's zero chemistry between those three movies. Like there's no.
Talk about the most recent.
Yeah, the sequel trilogy, right? Yeah. So those three, I think, have like zero synergy or cohesion between all three of them at all. But like it's which is the inverse problem of the prequel trilogy, which like those three movies, they had a vision. All three of them were very deeply connected, and like they knew they were one flowing story, but the execution of all three was kind of shitty. So like that's where I think they might be hurt trying to go back in time and say, oh, actually, Fantastic Beasts was good. Okay.
Well, I'm excited to see this movie.
No, I'm with you. I think what's going to end up happening is that this thing's going to tank or underwhelm. And I would say within the next 5 to 10 years, they're going to announce they're bringing everybody back. Rupert Grint, Hermione.
I hope they don't. Emma Watson, I hope they don't do that to them.
And Daniel Radcliffe, and they're going to do one more trilogy.
They all seem so happy now. I hope they don't do that to them.
They'll pull a Force Awakens, and they'll bring the crew back together for another go-around in a few years to try to revive the franchise. But I don't. There's nothing interesting enough about these Fantastic Beasts movies that I think is going to allow people to want to revisit them 5-10 years down the road. They're just dull film. Yeah.
I wonder, is there like what's the Star Wars Celebration version of for Harry Potter? Like what's their version of it? Is it like Harry Con or Potter Con? Potter Con sounds right.
They're all Potterheads. That's what the fans are called. Potterheads.
Potter Leaky Con? That can't be right.
That does not sound like a Harry Potter cauldron thing.
It's the Leaky Cauldron?
It's Leaky Con. It's in Orlando.
Of course it is.
Oh, wow. What a lineup of guests. Chris Rankin, who played Percy Weasley, headlining the studio. Great.
Who played Percy? Was Percy Weasley ever even shown in the movie?
Yeah, he was like 5 seconds. He was there for a movie.
Oh, yeah, he was in the first one.
Yeah, he was there for a second. That's in July. Huh. Might have to go down to Orlando for Leaky Con. That does not, again, you got to fix that name. Yeah, it's got, I mean, Leaky Cauldron aside, make it into something a little bit better. There's like an infinite world.
Leaky
Con. Yeah. Oh, god damn it. It's like Captain Cons when he has a wet dream, basically. Like it's just
my
disgusting.
Wand is leaking.
No dice. No dice for me. Okay, so Me and Chris, neither of us huge fans in this movie, but I mean, they're going to continue moving on Harry Potter in other directions, I'm sure. I will say, though, like we just mentioned, regardless of how much these movies have frustrated me, still super excited for this Harry Potter game because it just looks goddamn awesome.
Yeah, it's a different medium, and I think that growing up, at least up until – I probably didn't play the last few – back when they made movies based or video games based on movies, I liked playing the Harry Potter games.
Those ones
were simple, but like, I think it's cool that's where I want to see the Harry Potter universe go, is like stuff beyond just making movies. Like, I think of there's such an amazing world with Harry Potter that you can expand on in a video game universe that I am excited to see that.
I had I had the first four Harry Potter video games for PC, and I remember rebuying them in a pack. It was like a four pack, but it was the first three video games plus Quidditch World Cup, which was an awesome game, by the way.
Yes, that was my shit, dude. Yeah,
loved that game. That one, and I remember playing the first one on like my compact PC. And just like running around as Harry Potter saying Flipendo, like the weirdest spell that like you'd never heard of, like, and just I love the shit out of that. So I'm very pumped to see how this game turns out. But anyway, we're going to move on from Fantastic Beasts 3 and talk. We're going to do a Harry Potter things draft. Kind of excited for this. So this is what we're going to do. There's five categories. There is a movie, a good guy, a bad guy, a spell, and miscellaneous, whatever you want to say. So we're going to start out. Chris, you get to go first in a little Harry Potter draft. What do you want to pick?
I'm going movie, and it's probably the simplest answer here. Deathly Hallows Part 2, like, I know it was 11 years ago, but for people who grew up with those movies, that was, I think I said this on the show before, that was Avengers Endgame before Endgame was Endgame. Like, that was the big finale to this decade-long series that people had fallen in love with. And having rewatched it, well, it's been a while since I watched it. I was going to say I rewatched it recently, but I haven't. But I remember seeing it in theater twice. It was like Endgame, where the people cheered at all the right moments. They cried at all the right moments. It was such a fitting, somewhat cheesy but unique finale to what was a really wonderful, like, generation-defining film series. Like, what the MCU was to my teens and early adulthood, Harry Potter was, to my early, like, preteen teenage years. And it's like that for a lot of people as well. So I'm going with that one.
Yeah, it was an epic. And that's definitely, I think, it's hard. I feel like I have so much nostalgia built up in all these, but, like, from a technical standpoint, probably the best Harry Potter movie on all fronts. Yeah, absolutely.
They went all out.
Yeah. All right, Goochman, you're up next.
All right, this is kind of tough. I'm looking at the movies, deciding between two. And I do want to start with a movie because you're kind of more limited on the options there. And it's going to kill you, Kinjak, but I'm going to take Goblet of Fire. I know you hate that movie.
I love Goblet of Fire.
I know it changes, a shit ton from the books.
A lot.
Compresses storylines, just completely cuts others. But it's a fun movie. If you've never read the books, it's a very fun movie. You get all the different schools coming together like we were talking about earlier. You get the Romanians, the French. You got Hagrid being horny. You got Cedric Diggory just being an absolute Chad. You got his dad weeping, giving an all-time scream that's just so probably the most recognizable meme from the series. Yeah. It's either my boy, or bring the boy from Voldemort. And then the tournament itself, fun. You get the mermaid scene. You get a lot going on in that movie. And it kind of scratches an itch where it's just transitioning from the lighter kids' movies from Christopher Columbus and even Alfonso Cuarón's movie, Prisoner of Azkaban, into just full-on, these are made for teenagers and adults. I love the movie. And the Yule Ball. Can't forget the Yule Ball. Oh, Ron dressed like an absolute quirked-up white boy.
The fucking hair in that movie was... Oh.
It's so funny because it's like, I think, 2007, and everyone did have just long hair that year.
It's a fact. That is a fact.
You had to be there. Everyone had long hair. Everyone grew their hair out.
That movie was it's one of those things where it's very hard to get my be unbiased with it with the books, because that's my favorite book. I think it's the best Harry Potter book, and the movie is just like, it's not even like the same movie. It's crazy. But yeah, that one's not great. For my pick, my movies are locked up, I can go back to that later. I think I will do Good Guy, and I think I don't want to pick Harry Potter. I really don't. It'll fuck me in the graphic, but, like, I don't care. Like, I just don't. Like, Harry Potter, like, fails upwards into every victory he's ever had in his life. And, like, I just – I don't like that. I think the actual – best good guy in Harry Potter, despite being far from the most powerful character, is Hagrid. Hagrid rocks. Hagrid is one of the best characters in Harry Potter. And the guy who plays him, his name escapes me off the top of my head. He was so good.
Robbie Coltrane.
Yeah, right? Robbie Coltrane. Yeah. He was fantastic in all of the movies, man. So good. I just love – like, he's one of those guys, you see him in any of the Harry Potter movies, you just want to run up and give him a big old bear hug. Like, he's just like a pleasant little giant, constantly getting into a little trouble, you know, getting himself a little dragon or whatever, getting his hippogriff and all that crap. Like – it's great.
He carries the first movie.
Oh, yeah.
If you go back and rewatch it,
yeah, really, the first two, you could argue.
The kids really can't act well at that point. Despite the magic of it all, it's all fun. But he really kind of just puts on a show and works really well off their, you know, the child joy going on.
Okay, yeah. So I'm going to back-to-back Hagrid with let's do bad guy. And for bad guy, I think, like, yeah, Voldemort, yeah, he's the big bad guy. It's the same kind of deal with Harry Potter, though.
Don't say his name.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to offend anyone that was listening. But I'm going to go with Lucius Malfoy, because I think Lucius Malfoy in those first two, especially the second movie, was one of the most devilishly evil guys, like, ever. And that was Jason Isaacs, right, who was also a fantastic bad guy in The Patriot and many other things. Like, what was that fucking Netflix series where they do the dance to stop the school shooter? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, jeez.
Oh.
It's like one – something with an O. Oh, my God. I can't remember. He was in that, too, and he was really good. Fantastic in Death of Stalin. But, yeah, I think him as Lucius Malfoy might – again, not the most powerful villain. Definitely does a little bit of a face turn, I guess, towards the end of the movies, too, when Draco's in trouble. But I think Lucius Malfoy is, deliciously evil. And, like, Voldemort's just kind of, like, slimy, gross evil. Like, there's other people, too, on the list, like Bellatrix and all that. But I feel like, for me – the villain that stood out the most in, like, the limited amount of screen time was Lucius Malfoy. I always just loved him so much. But, Robbie, you're up next.
All right. This is going to be a very normie pick for good guy. I'm going to go Sirius Black.
Mm.
He's just the cool – I think he might be the coolest guy in the whole series. I think Gary Oldman might have been the best actor or put on the best performance in the whole series. He just looked cool as shit. Even when he's dirty and greasy, you're just like, this guy fucking rules. Mm-hmm. Just a vagabond wizard. He was so cool. And he was basically, I mean, when you're reading the books, you're like, damn, I really hope Harry gets to end up living with Sirius.
Yeah, man.
You're like, damn, yeah. Harry finally, because they really hammer the fact that Harry's fucking aunt and uncle suck.
Yeah.
I might have to pick one of them coming up. And the fact that he finally has, like, this father figure, like, oh, hell yeah, and this guy's just the coolest. And then that's what makes the Bellatrix Lestrange just cross that much more impactful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with Sirius.
That people forget. I think that last ending scene, and like for wherever you want to rank Order of the Phoenix in the group of the movies, I don't care. But like the last 20 minutes of Order of the Phoenix, I thought so was awesome.
Good. He's back. I killed Sirius Black, though. Yeah. Oh, so good.
Sirius Black's death into the scene where Voldemort tries to possess Harry Potter, who I thought was so fucking good. I thought that's extremely well done. The rest of the movie, sure.
Maybe the best CGI throughout the whole series was that fight between Dumbledore
and Voldemort. Yeah, with the water and all that shit.
Sound design, too, in that.
Yeah.
It's so fucking cool. Yeah.
That little, when he, flips the wand to get into the ball, yeah.
Yeah. That's a good pick. I got back-to-back now.
Right? Yes.
I mean... talk about falling to me. I got to go Harry Potter for the good guy. And the series is named after the poor kid. But even beyond that, I do appreciate the fact that I feel like often in genre films, when there's a big ensemble cast, the main character is often just kind of the most bland of the bunch. And I like the fact that Harry, at least in the movies, and I'm sure in the books as well, really just grows as a person.
For
and
sure.
You see, you see him at low points, you see him when he's frustrated. He's not just Mr. Perfect all the time. I would even argue for a majority of Order of the Phoenix, he's pretty fucking unlikable. Like, he's kind of a little shit until the very end. Obviously, he's struggling with a bunch, but yeah, that'll be my pick. And then for the bad guy, not going Voldemort, I'm going with the guy who in that series, most punchable faced, the guy who I most likely want to just see shoved into a locker. Peter fucking Pettigrew. I hated literally a fuck that guy. I mean, because Timothy Spalding is so good in that role, and it's like, I loved Colin Farrell, but at the same time, if they were to do another Penguin, that guy would have been the fucking Penguin. If they did, he's so good in that, especially in Azkaban.
El Rada, a lot of
yeah.
What's that?
I said El Rata Alata.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I don't know. He's like, he's not the most threatening. But it was between him and Bellatrix of those characters that you just, their faces just bother you. And so that's the one I'm going.
It's making
with.
Me regret not taking Umbridge now, because that, like, in that and maybe like a single movie dose, she was one of the most hateable characters in Harry Potter, because she was such a good villain. I hated that. But you're great. That's a great pick. I think the costume design on him too, making him look more rat-like, was so good. Yeah. Like, he just looked like this filthy fucking rat human. I love that, the way that they designed him. I think that's a good pick. Robbie, you're up.
All right, let's go bad guy. Back to it. Not going to say his name.
Yeah.
Still on the board, but I'm going to go in a different direction. I kind of brought him up before. I'm going to go Uncle Vernon.
Mm.
And if I can, I'd like to go Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia.
I think
they stink.
Yeah, I think
they're just the worst. I mean, just mean to this little boy who's their family. Because
for no reason.
For no reason other than the fact that, oh, like, these other people are way cooler and can do magic. Man, really hope this kid's not cool as shit, too, because that'd make us look like even bigger losers. I mean, just the worst. And they really harp on it in that first movie when they're taking him to the zoo. I mean, he's just a little boy. He's like 9 years old. And they're screaming in his face, telling him to get back underneath the cupboard. I mean, I would have called CPS if I was their neighbors.
I don't think they have that in England, because they are like the inventors of child labor. Like, they weren't given, they don't have CPS there.
Yeah.
They had kids in the coal mines at like
Star Schools. I'm not going to do the bit right now.
Those first two movies, too, they were so exceptionally evil. Like, when they put the bars on Harry's window and like.
And
oh,
they never really come around.
Yeah.
They never really get any kind of. Dudley does. Mm-hmm. Dudley gets a little redemption.
Yeah.
They don't.
And that guy, was it Harry Melling? That guy plays Dudley? I now a fantastic actor. He's in a bunch of stuff now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my pick. Aunt and Uncle.
I think that's a really good one. I can't think of now the scene in Chamber of Secrets, which was one of my favorites. The scene where, like, Harry drops the big-ass cake on the head. Prison. Yeah. But that too. But the whole sequence of Dobby making him embarrassed that there's always made me very happy. Yes. Okay, so I got back-to-back. I'm going to save movie for last. I'll do Spell first, and I'll do the classic, like, and I'll get that off the board really quick. The Killing Curse. It's one of the most bizarre things, because, like Abracadabra, like, that's like the classic magician spell or whatever. And J.K. Rowling's like, yeah, what if it fucking killed people? And, like, you will just put a V in it, and everyone will be like, yeah, that works. And it does. That makes no fucking sense. There's other ones, like, there's a Crucius, which is the torture one, and then I forget which one, like, lets you take over people. Like, something with an eye, I forget. But Avada Kedavra, the little green blip, just murders someone dead. Something about it I love.
J.K. Rowling, much like George Lucas, very creative in some areas of the lore.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff, they just kind of mailed in with those spells. It's like,
yep.
Wingardium Leviosa.
She is the
interesting.
Worst. She's the worst person ever at naming things.
Yeah.
Anything. People. Yeah.
Yeah. First thing, let's call, we got this Chinese student. What should we call her?
Cho Chang. Like, come on, dude. You kidding me? But yeah, no, I'm going to go with Avada Kedavra off the bat. Let's do, on the next end of it, I'll do my miscellaneous pick, and I'll do Quidditch. I have always loved Quidditch. I think Quidditch is one of the coolest things ever invented in Harry Potter. Even though it's like, it's such a stupid-ass game, because like, you'd be playing this game for an hour. You'd be throwing those quaffles right through there, and like, you could, some guy on the other team just catches the fucking snitch, and it's over, and you lost, and because they have 250 points on the board. Like, I would be miserable to take part of this sport, but it was really fun to watch, and I think that the way that they did it in the first few movies especially, I thought was really, really cool. It made me, like, really excited to be, like I was like, I want to do Quidditch. Never ended up joining an adult Quidditch league, to my own regret. I think I will eventually. But those, I always thought was cool. Quidditch World Cup, I mentioned before, one of my favorite Harry Potter games. And I always thought that the way that they portrayed it was sick, and I always wanted to be a seeker. So I'm going to pick that, and now you are up, Robbie.
I'm going to go Spell. Obviously, there's a lot of different choices on the board. I try to think of which one would I like to use the most if magic was real in the real world, which let's not rule anything out. It could be. And that's the Accio spell. It's like the bring it to me spell. Like, you just Accio, broom. Broom comes. Because I'm a lazy son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And if I was on the couch and I just needed... Oh, I think about that all the time. If I could just be on the couch... Remotes on the other side of the room, or just my lost Apple TV remote, Akio Apple TV remote. Save a lot of time. Be perfect. Yeah, it's a great spell. I think it's probably the most underrated spell in the whole the whole Harry Potter universe. That or Erecto.
Wish we could say like Akio yourself some bitches or something like that.
Yeah, Akio a busty busty petite.
Yeah,
that's a great. I feel like there's a substantial amount of loopholes regarding the spells in the Harry Potter universe that could easily be exploited for personal gain.
Yeah, that's actually I think the one spell they actually say in the movie is like they make a point to show. Newt Scamander, right in the beginning scene where like he's rescuing that creature, the one that like tells the soul or whatever, like he's like he says like Akio suitcase, and it's like 5 feet away from him, but like that's the
that's
one
exactly how I'd use it. I would not use it for anything like creative or like I would not like it wouldn't do much for me, but it would just enable my laziness even more.
I think that's actually a great pick because if I could actually pick one spell to be able to cast for the rest of my life, it would be that. I don't want to fucking know how to murder people with a spell. give me the summoning spell. All right, Chris, you got back-to-back to round yourself out.
I'm going to go Expecto Patronum for the spell just because maybe not the most powerful spell in the universe. I do remember one of the issues I had, even when I was young with the first two Harry Potter movies, is like and this has actually been kind of like a fandom thing is that Harry's kind of a shitty wizard. And it wasn't until Azkaban when he cast, you know, the Patronus at the end of that movie, really such a well-directed, really powerful moment. Like, oh, shit, like this guy, he actually, like there is something to him. Like there's
a big shot maker.
What's that?
He's not a consistent player, but he can make
Robert Horry, He's big shot pot.
He's good in the clutch, right? Yeah, he comes up when it matters most. So it's like I remember watching that scene and being like, I think it's why so many people really love that movie and think it's like one of the best of the franchise is that it's the first movie where you really feel like Harry grows as a person and as a wizard. So I'm going to go with that for my spell. And then for my miscellaneous, I'm going to go with a character and I'm going to go Neville for my last for my miscellaneous character or just miscellaneous thing in the Harry Potter universe. I would have gone Quidditch, but I just loved the fact that you had this big ensemble in the early parts of the Harry Potter universe, and so many of them at the beginning were kind of played up for comedic relief, and yet by the end of the last Deathly Hallows, they're all kind of contributing to this big battle, and they've all grown as people, and they've all grown as wizards, and the fact that Neville in that last movie became like the biggest stud ever was such a crowd-pleasing thing, and but what was cool is that it felt organic, too. It felt like the next logical step, and you saw in Azkaban and Order of the Phoenix, and then obviously in the last couple Deathly Hallows movies, that he was a character who really grew. And I love that in movies. I love, especially when you have the ability to create a franchise and you can have these long, winding story arcs and see these people grow over time. I thought that was awesome. So he's my miscellaneous pick.
Neville turning from like the most disgusting little British boy that you would see like in the production of like Oliver Twist or whatever into being like this crazy hot fucking tall dude is like insane to me still. I think that's a good pick, though. Undersung hero of Harry Potter in both the books and movies.
Yeah.
All right, Robbie, you're up.
Finally. I didn't realize we could go characters in the miscellaneous area.
I guess so. Yeah, it's anything you want.
And now I'm kind of at a crossroads because I did have something down here, but the more I think about it, I'm like, I don't know if I'd use that. It's the cloak, but I think I'm going to go Fred and George.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, they just seem like two dudes that would be fun to, you know, hang out with, go down, get a butterbeer with. Obviously, they're the biggest entrepreneurs in the entire Harry Potter world.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole world's like in a recession, and for some reason, their joke shop is
they got
just
the grind
taking
set.
Off. Yeah.
I got the Fred and George grind set. Wake up every day making pranks for wizards.
And maybe one of the more impactful deaths.
Yeah.
In the whole series. Which one was it? Was it George?
It was George that died, right?
And then obviously Molly Weasley just goes on a rampage after that, leading to one of the better scenes in the final movie.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go Fred George.
I think it's a really good pick. All right, I got to round it out with movie. I could pick a movie that I think would help me in the actual draft where like people will look at the graphic and not be like, oh, you fucking stupid. Like, and like, it'll help me cry a little bit, but I'm going to go with my actual heart here. I'm going to pick Chamber of Secrets because I think that movie had the most impact on me, especially as a kid, because like I loved the books so much growing up, and like I was lucky enough for my best friend growing up, his parents are from Ireland, and they got the book, like, or their relatives got the book early. They had shipped it over to the U.S. for us to read, and like we read it, and we're like, holy shit, we gotta read these when they come out here. And like we were in book lines at Barnes and Noble at 12 a.m. every fucking time one of them released. We went to the releases of all the movies until the fourth one, which we fucking hated because it was so different from the book. but like I think from that age, when Chamber of Secrets came out, which had what year was that? I would guess like 2002.
2002, I think.
Let's see, Chamber of Secrets.
Because the first one is 2001.
2002. So I was 11 years old. So like that's the year you, or rather, I wasn't 11. I was 93. So I was 9 years old. So like that is like the, we're right in the period where like I'd be like, I was thinking like, oh yeah, well I'm obviously gonna get a letter and go to Hogwarts. Like this is just how it's gonna work. Yeah. So like that point when I'm watching that movie, like I have so much nostalgic value tied up into that movie, and I think that a lot of it is done really well. I think like the Kenneth Branagh rendition Lockhart, of Lockhart, so good,
so funny,
brilliant. I think the kids were like a step up, like acting wise, from where they were in the first movie. Obviously, because they weren't like little, like super little kids anymore. I think a lot of the other characters are really good. I think that Richard Harris is a far superior Dumbledore to Michael Gambon, and it might just be because he was like the first one that we were exposed to.
I love Gambon's voice.
Yeah,
I think he's been in a lot of voice acting roles, and he's great. But Richard Harris really knocked Dumbledore out of the park. The
perfect old wise man, and like it really fit. I don't know how they would have done some of the action scenes that Dumbledore needed to do later in the series with Richard Harris, who was very old at the time.
Just get the guy.
I think that's why I prefer Gambit.
Okay,
because he becomes way more active in the last. Like it really, once it gets to Goblet of Fire and beyond, that I just wonder. Like it's actually bizarre because they're both so good, and yet I feel like both of them fit the way the characters were written in their respective movies.
That's
like
fair.
I couldn't have seen Gambon in Sorcerer's Stone or Chamber of Secrets, and I couldn't have seen Richard Harris do anything beyond Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, you raise a good point. Like Harris was not kinetic at all. Like he did not move at all in either of those first
movies. He just hung out in the dining room.
yeah, he hung out in the dining room and like kind of walked around. And I think the one spell I remember him like vividly doing is when he changed all the fucking flags from Slytherin to Gryffindor. And yeah, just a clap. He did a clap on, clap off, where he fucked Slytherin out of all those points.
Dumbledore really did have the biggest boner for Gryffindor. I mean, it was just complete and utter favoritism.
Oh yeah,
for them. But the other thing, okay, I can't be the first person who's pointed this out. Like, Cleveland Browns quarterbacks have a more consistent rate of success than Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers at Hogwarts. Dude.
Yes.
Like the amount of I'm trying to think. It was there in the eight, I guess Mad-Eye Moody technically, right?
I think he quit to be like an aura, because that wasn't actually him. That's right.
It wasn't his.
It was Barty Crouch or Barty Crouch's kid
in the sixth one. Do they move Snape over?
No, Slughorn.
Yeah, they move Snape into defense, and then they get Slughorn to do the potions.
Got to play Slughorn.
I think Slughorn is the only one who back to back years was able to retain his job.
Well, Slughorn did potions.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
they moved Snape over, and then Snape did like the private lessons with Harry.
Right, so I guess he was able, just a bad track record at Hogwarts.
Oh, terrible. Yeah. But I agree. Track. Actually, off the top of the draft, I was deciding between Chamber of Secrets and Goblet of Fire. I think Chamber of Secrets is maybe the most underappreciated out of
Same
the bunch.
Here.
It's very colorful. It's the first movie where I can remember really getting scared. I mean,
the Basilisk was scary as shit.
The Basilisk was terrifying. It really was. It's just a giant snake. I mean, what's not to be scared of? And Moaning Myrtle, of course, the sex pest herself.
Yeah. People forget.
Yes. In that movie, a lot of good stuff.
So Bill Weasley was in seventh year of Harry Potter. He was the Defense Against Dark Arts teacher. Then who was before that? Was it the same guy? Patricia Rakepick? I don't remember that at all. I don't remember that bit at all. That doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem right at all. Well, anyway.
That's when you're like... It's like Ryan Fitzpatrick Rake started pick. For the Bengals.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you just kind of forget that these things happen. But yeah, so I think we all have good lists. So here's our final little groups. Chris, you have Deathly Hallows. You have the character Harry Potter. Peter Pettigrew, Expecto Patronum, which we mentioned before. Great scream by Harry Potter in that moment.
Awesome.
Yeah. That was like the first big acting moment, like you missed it, Chris. Neville Longbottom. Robbie, you have Goblet of Fire, Sirius Black, and Uncle Vernon, and Aunt Petunia. You have Accio. You have Fred and George. I have Hagrid, Lucius Malfoy, Avada Kedavra, Quidditch, and the Chamber of Secrets. I think pretty good teams. I feel like Chris you guys, one of you two is definitely going to win. No one's going to pick mine because I picked with my heart and not
people
with
hate.
The idea
I mean, you just got to accept people hate your Harry Potter opinions. I respect them. I think people who read the books respect them.
I'm a book first guy for Harry Potter for sure, and it shows in anything in all my movie opinions. Sure, like it bleeds over way too much. I think one of you two is definitely going to win this, and I think I couldn't say. Goblet of Fire stands are very vocal. They are super fucking hardcore. So I feel like it might be Robbie here. But anyway, we'll be back in a couple days with a new episode of The Bracket. Also, I believe Jeff will be back for the next episode on next Sunday as well. We worked out the schedule correctly, but he's got a lot coming up with the Barstool vs. America and obviously the Chicago thing as well.
Watch
The Dozen. Yes, make sure you watch The Dozen. Make sure, Chris, you did like 5 shows today, didn't you?
I did 3. I just uploaded I'll Say This. And then I was on Money Shots earlier today with Megan and Kelly, and now I'm doing this.
And now you're doing this too. Yeah, so we got a lot going on for everybody here. And make sure to like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. From us, I'm Ken Jack. That's Chris. That's Robbie Goochman, first time on the hot mic. We will see you on The Bracket.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.